I don't know. I think
Right, pack it up, pack it in. Let me begin. Answers on a postcard is what that is. We are recording.
Excellent.
Oh yeah, before I go any further, I better tell Drew what we're eating,
Oh
because it'll
yeah.
upset him otherwise.
Penn State baked pretzels, sour cream, and chive.
Well, it's a good flavor. Underrated, I think. Yeah.
And the way that the
Good
powder
idea.
settles, it gets stronger as you go down the bag.
Oh.
Yes, yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of crunchy. I like soft pretzels. Not the biggest fan of crunchy pretzels.
No, I
I'd rather
prefer
just go
these.
Crisps, I think.
Yeah, these are crisp pretzels.
They're one of those things that, like, I don't have them very often, but every now and then I'll just get like a little craving for them, and it'll be like the kind of craving that only they will satisfy because they're kind of like they're a bit salty, but they're a bit kind of not salty. They're a bit bready. I don't know what they are, but like they're kind of unique in a way, aren't they? It's not like
Yeah.
crisps where there are lots of different like variations. I like Pringles, by the way, and I don't. And
Oh,
I
Pringles are
think.
great.
I like
Oh,
Pringles,
okay.
yeah.
Yeah,
Oh, I
No,
thought I was going to get way more pushback on that.
as
No,
long as
no,
they've
no,
not been allowed to get a little bit soft, which is quite easy. They tend to go a little bit
no,
soft quite quickly, I find.
no. You've got to eat the whole tin in one
Yeah,
go.
exactly.
Yeah, like what you're doing, letting them like.
No. I mean, if you get a box that are like been sitting in the shop for a while or whatever, you know.
Oh, those kind of ones,
Yeah,
yeah. I
not
mean,
bad, but you know, not out of date. Because out of date, it's obvious, you know. But they're
yeah.
The type of crispy snack thing that goes just a wee bit on the turn,
Yeah.
in an unpleasant to taste, unpleasant to texture way, rather than it being, you know, not the flavor. They're not going, yeah, these aren't nice. They just sort
Just
of,
not got that crunchy snap.
yeah, they don't get the full
No,
snap.
a Pringle's not generally like then. Did you think there was going to be a? Because
Yeah, I
that.
thought I feel like I've had this conversation with other people in my life, and I've had immediate pushback. And
No.
maybe it's our age. Pringles
Maybe
were,
people are against the
yeah.
they're like reconstituted potato, like hula hoops and stuff, aren't they?
Yeah,
Yeah,
they're not.
but
Yeah, they're
hang on,
not real crisps.
reconstituted is a bit of a dirty word, right? Because
Well, it's
in
the
my
truth.
mind, and I could be completely wrong about how they make Pringles, but I always kind of imagine that they basically get mashed potato, you know, add
Yeah.
some like various flavors, and then press them into that
Yeah.
shape.
I mean, it's they use
You're
powder. It'd be like
close. You're close, but
smash.
it'll
They
be
use like
powdered stuff. Yeah,
powdered potato. Yeah.
it'll be the dregs of whatever they use to make some other potato product, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're great.
Well, you got to use all of the potato. You don't want to waste
Exactly.
food, you know.
Oh,
Like,
yeah. The
I
horns and the
use all of the
tail.
potato. Like when I do potatoes, unless it's like mashed potato, I tend to just keep the skin on for
Oh,
everything,
yeah,
you
no.
know.
The skin's great. The skin is the best bit.
And like part of it is like laziness. Part of it is like, well, there's fiber in the skin, and like I don't want to say the vast majority of adults, but like a lot of people do not get enough fiber in the diet.
This is
You know,
true.
it's a win-win, you know.
What were you going to say about boomers and TV?
Oh, boomers and TV. You said just before we went recording, right? That like so as you were saying before we were recording, like a lot of people, sometimes in marriages, will just put on the TV for noise.
Default
You know,
TV, yeah.
default TV on. And I said that was a very boomer thing. And then I think you said, Drew, like the earlier boomers were sort of new to TV, right? Or you know, new to
I
the
said
norm.
Gen X is the generation that spans, that really has, a foot in both, old
Especially
analog
in the
stuff and
UK, I would
digital new
say,
stuff.
because
Yeah.
we only had a couple of channels. We only had three channels when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And the fourth one came along when I was like 11 or 12, 13, somewhere around about there. So,
Yeah.
you know, there was less, it wasn't like, it was before there was like a bazillion channels, you know, in cable and satellite and all that stuff.
Yeah, and then I remember when Channel 5 came along, but it was a bit rubbish. So, like, but I like Channel 4. There's a lot of good stuff on Channel
Channel
4.
4
Don't like.
was, Channel 4 used to be way more exciting than it was, and way more, they pushed the boundaries of things. And I don't just mean like,
Yeah.
oh, we're edgy and adult. They would put the kind of documentaries and
Yeah.
films and things that the other channels just wouldn't do.
News is always a bit more
Yeah, they
honest.
don't seem so afraid to ask questions, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that like their news on out of the main TV channels is probably some of the best coverage. You
Yeah.
know, like don't get me wrong, not perfect. No news organization would be perfect, but Is it Christian Guru Murphy?
Christian Guru Murphy.
He's pretty good from what I see. You know, and
yeah.
compared to their BBC and Sky News counterparts, right? They, mm-hmm. but like I imagine when we're talking about maybe older boomers and is it Silent Generation before that?
Greatest Generation before that, and Silent, yeah.
Yeah, when we go back that period, I do kind of think that could that be a hangover from radio? Because radio is the kind of thing that's a lot more suited for background noise. You have it on the backgrounds even still today at workplaces, because it's a bit of chatter, maybe a bit of music, but it's something you're typically doing something whilst it's going on.
Well, not always. You've got to remember a lot of people of that, way before us, but yeah, older generation. Everything was on the radio. There was no programs elsewhere. So dramas, news, comedy shows and everything were on the radio. So there was a lot of actual active listening as well.
Mm.
You know, a lot of what you now get on, say, Radio 4, for example, you know, that kind of thing would be like the mainstay. You know, like The Goons, for example, was like a thing that the family would listen to. Don't think everyone in the family would get most of it, but... But there was something there for, you know, there was a sort of broader appeal of certain things.
Mm.
And people would gather around the radio. Okay, they're not looking, well, they probably were looking at the radio.
Probably were, because the glow.
The glow and the little lights and stuff.
Yeah. But no, I don't think the TV was a habit they continue from the radio. I think it's just... Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, with like girlfriends and that, yeah, we'd get home, we'd put the TV on, and we would chat. You know, you chat while you're watching the TV. It's something to talk about. It's something to share together. I don't think it's as passive as it's sometimes made out to be.
Yeah.
But also nowadays, it's a bit like with the on-demand TV, and you choose and pick shows.
Mm.
And I think like the quality of what we watch nowadays is a lot higher because of that. You can choose,
but the diversity is much lower.
The diversity is much lower. You're much less likely to watch something that you wouldn't otherwise usually watch.
I think that's
a
problem, and it's a problem you can't really fix, because when you're choosing, you're obviously not going to choose something that you don't want to watch. Whereas, on TV, a black and white film would come on, you'd be like, ugh, and you'd watch it, and it'd be fucking great all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was younger before when we had the good old fashioned TV. I remember like catching films and stuff. I think that's how I caught Fight Club. Like it was just on a movie night on a TV.
Fight Club. It's like that was like an event, and when I was younger, you know, it was like the thing that the film people were into. But do they still show black and white films on TV? I'm guessing they must do somewhere, or is it like a niche thing now? You know,
I think because it used to be stuff like that. Used to be the cheap programming and cartoons, like Warner Brothers cartoons. That used to be what they put on as filler. Mm. And now, like, because reality TV is so cheap, and you know, like fucking, and you know, that antique show that where
loads of those antique shows.
And, like, here's how you do a house up, and like, I think those shows have taken the place, and I think that's really sad because they are not as, you know.
That was the start of when I stopped watching TV. Actually, it was in the 90s when a lot of it was when I was with someone, when I was married, we would kind of watch those home makeover shows and supposed to be getting ideas, but never did. but that sort of thing, it's when it's turned to the sort of like Big Brother, when like shows became more, when even those kind of daytime shows became more exploitative, instead of being like, well, here's what to do, here's a wacky idea to paint your house, here's how to paint your house, and then buy a house, paint it, and get rid of it quickly, and make loads of money. You know, that kind of thing just started becoming the more prominent thing, and the news organisations were all starting to be bought out by one or two billionaires, and it's like I just gave up.
I will say, I think Channel 5 was better at its inception than it became later on. They would actually have like old films and stuff on, because you know that's all they can afford. But yeah, I think they're also deleterious to TV in general. Like they're sort of like race to the bottom made everybody else follow in that direction.
Do you think Channel 5 really had that much influence? Because I kind of feel like it was
it got big audience.
You've got to remember that a lot of people didn't have, a lot of people still don't have satellite and
No, my girlfriend. And
you'd be surprised at how many people don't have the internet as a solid, streamable, watchable internet and stuff. You know, a lot of people have just got the internet for a bit of web, a bit of email.
Yeah, but I mean,
have a good solid.
My girlfriend at the time girlfriend at the time when Channel 5 launched, she would default to Channel 5.
Amazing. I mean, I've seen a number of programs on Channel 5 that were programs. They bought Robot Wars for a bit, and any excuse to have more Robot Wars on the telly.
I think the reason my ex defaulted to it was, I think they got Friends, and they would just put like five episodes of Friends on a day kind of thing.
And then there was Joey, the spin-off that was hilariously awful. That was like, what even were you doing?
Friends is overrated.
I don't know. I can't help but think it was
of each time as well a bit.
Per generation, there's one that is the one, right? Mm. And I think Friends was just that one. It was about as good as Big Bang Theory, I think.
No, it's wrong.
Similar kind of humor, similar kind of joke.
It's not funnier than Big Bang Theory. No,
absolute bollocks.
Yeah, they both are. That's the point.
No,
you know what it was before that. Before we get, can you hold that anger for a second? Because otherwise, I'll lose my thread on this, and we are like not.
Hurry up! Come on! Go
ahead. Yeah. Okay. So I'd say before that, before Friends, it was Cheers.
Cheers was actually good.
That's not aged well. No, Cheers was good. That's not aged well. That's not aged well.
I've not watched it recently.
And before Cheers, it was MASH.
Yeah, MASH. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So MASH was the show that came along, and then it finished. You know, it had a big finish.
Taxi for a while.
Taxi was good. No, Taxi was concurrent with MASH, though, I would say, or
yeah, Taxi was good.
In between Taxi and
Danny DeVito.
Yeah,
I like.
I mean, it was really, really clever. Christopher.
Christopher Lloyd was the crackhead in it. He was great.
Seinfeld was in there somewhere, kind of overlapping with Friends.
Yeah, Seinfeld was.
I hate Seinfeld.
Yeah, I like Seinfeld.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not. I probably feel about Seinfeld like you feel about Friends.
No. The problem with Seinfeld is it's mean humor. It's cynical humor, and it's not.
It is mean, but they acknowledge that towards the end.
I don't care.
And they actually went to jail for being arseholes. That was what happened at the end of the show.
Whereas Friends is just low quality comedy. It's very obvious jokes, very obvious stuff. And it does that thing that sitcoms do.
It's where committee written. Yeah.
If somebody was behaving like that in real life, you would call a fucking, like, a doctor or something. Like, that is, like, people don't behave like that. And if it's ungrounded as well, which I think.
Well, that's,
I'm not saying that's like, oh, it breaks immersion, but that is a characteristic of that, like, low quality comedy.
I occasionally catch the episode of a Friends or two, and I actually think that I'm not going to necessarily like argue for it to be to consider it any kind of height of comedy or any height of quality, as you say. It is like
it's not British for a start.
It's the mainstream.
It's the mainstream, but it is infinitely better than The Big Bang for a number of reasons. Mm. First off, there are like I don't know how to phrase this without sounding basically woke. But like the women in it have like legitimately developed characters, and they're not basically
To the rest of everything else.
They're not secondary to the rest of it.
I don't think that's true.
I'm not sure it is 100% true either. But I know what you're saying. In The Big Bang Theory, they definitely aren't. You know, they're definitely just there for the men.
I mean, I think Friends was a show. It was a sitcom. Not necessarily for, but leaning towards a female audience. So I think
I'd agree with that. Or
I would say like,
the 90s. What was the 90s man thing? What was the thing called? Metrosexual. That was it, wasn't it? Although that was more of a derogatory thing.
And I think some of the later on, I think some of the characters, no characters developed in Big Bang Theory. They're all fucking idiots. But the female characters are as developed as the men. I think certainly as it goes on.
But that's because they're very aware of the dumb shit that they've created there, right?
I don't think Big Bang Theory is dumber than Friends. Probably the other way, slightly.
No. It's orders of magnitude dumber than Friends. Orders of magnitude.
Of all the things I thought that we argue about, I never thought this would be one of them. What's your favorite big pile of shite? Well, actually, this big pile of shite is better than that big pile of shite.
No. First of all, badger shite is well acknowledged as the biggest, worst pile of shite. But that aside, because it fucking stinks. But, like, I got so
as
angry...
As David Mitchell says, nobody's putting dog on their roses.
the best sheep is sheep shit. Sheep shit actually smells slightly pleasant.
You said the best
horse
sheep.
Horse shit
smells of nothing. Yeah.
No, horse shit is grassy. Like, it's... I mean, it smells of countryside.
Anyway, back on friends, come on.
Okay, so like, I mean, Big Bang Theory...
I wish I had popcorn instead of pretzels now.
First of all, like, knowing how they write an episode of The Big Bang Theory has definitely made me realise how
stupid
it is. Well, kind of. Like, they do. They have the big writer's room.
That's how they do all these American shows. Yeah, that's how Friends was written as well.
There's a but.
That's where the shit comes from.
That's where the shit comes from, yeah. The but is that when they do science-y, they leave the science-y bits blank for someone else to fill in, right? So, and that, for some reason, infuriates me about the process.
Why? I'll tell you what infuriates me about Friends. Fucking Phoebe. One of the most annoying characters created in any... Like, she rivals Claptrap for fucking annoyingness.
No, and again, Claptrap is way worse.
That actor, when she appears in anything else, plays Phoebe from Friends. It's the most infuriating fucking thing.
That's because Friends was so big. Like, Jennifer Aniston kind of does the same thing.
Jennifer Aniston is in Office Space, and she's very good in that. And that's a good film.
Okay. But no, Claptrap is way worse. No. And also, but the question I want to ask on running on to that, also, but like, also, one of the things I want to just throw in here is Frasier has actually aged really well. I know, again, that it's rather quite, like, it's a bit, like, bland. I don't want to say bland, but, like, unexciting. You know, like,
it's written to appeal to bourgeois aspirations. People who, not quite people who are bourgeois, but people who want to be
mid-brow.
Bourgeois. Mid-brow!
You want to say
it's
mid-brow.
Mid-brow. It's mid-brow. It's bang on mid-brow. Yep.
Mid-brow.
Yeah, it's bang on mid-brow, yeah.
But I got a lot of respect for David Hyde Pierce, who I think kind of made that show. Also, side note.
No. The dad made the show.
Oh, well, he was good. I liked him. But the Niles Crane character.
Yeah.
Well, mostly to do with his influence on in and how the show sort of panned out. But also
sorry, very briefly before you move on. Is it Fraser's ex-wife? What's her name?
Yes,
Lilith.
Played by I forgot her name now. I was going to say it and I forgot it now.
Absolutely gorgeous.
But sorry, carry on.
But a lot of women, and I mean a lot of women, fancy Niles Crane. And I
really,
like, he is a massive, like, under the radar heartthrob. He is gay, but the actor, but yeah. But like, yeah,
BB,
like,
New Earth.
Because I like he's really the only character I like. Tom Frazier.
Yeah,
he's probably is. Even the woman was kind of fucking annoying.
Yeah, BB New Earth is the.
I like Roz.
I didn't dislike her, but she's a bit irritating.
She's a bit like the '90s Ladette.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like Martin. I like Eddie the dog. Like the. You know, I know it's a bit silly.
We're also, I mean, we're forgetting about all those excellent 90s British sitcoms like
Red Dwarf.
No. I said excellent and sitcom.
Porridge is excellent.
That's 70s.
That's like 70s.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We did good ones in the 70s. No, but if you want to watch a good sitcom, Arrested Development is just the best sitcom. Because it's not even the kind of comedy I like, but it's so fucking exquisitely constructed. Mm. It is just the best sitcom.
I don't know if I can take any word for things about comedy from either of you, because you think The American Office is good.
It's much better than the British one, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Infinitely better than the British one.
You know, and I give
heroic main character. Yeah. Fuck off.
And I like Ricky Gervais far more than I should do. You know, really? As well. So
he's a cunt.
He is the worst.
He just plays the horrific characters. He plays are just him.
Yeah. Oh.
Whenever
you hear
clips of other things he does, and then. People treat him like he's an actual fucking stand-up comedian. He's made enough money for TV networks that they'll give him a fucking show and let him make a whatever.
Hang on a minute. Are you telling me that you don't think this is cool?
Uh-oh. My phone went off. Okay, what's... Oh, not this again. This is your fucking Trump card, isn't it? Whenever Ricky Gervais comes out, you got to bring out that picture. We've got to put it up for the folks at home.
That is, as the kids say, fucking cringe.
That is absolute cringe. That is absolute cringe. But
it's on the screen for the audience.
Thank you. But the thing that gets me is his radio show is like London-based radio show. What he used to say about disabled people can never truly ever be forgiven because it was fucking horrendous.
What did he say? I'm not aware.
Okay, so we had this segment. Oh, God. I can't even believe... this should be confined to the dustbin of history, if anything.
No. The thing is, these people should be fucking called out. It's like David Baddiel getting... How can I put this? Let's just say racist washed. Leave it at that, without being offensive to any
just,
one group.
Just because you mentioned David Baddiel, Frank Skinner propositioned my ex in a gallery.
Did he? How? Yeah. What?
Basically just said, do you want to come back to my hotel room and fuck?
And what did she say?
I think she was tempted just because he was famous, but she did politely decline.
Oh, okay.
And she was also told off by Jude Law.
What for?
Told off?
She was working, I won't say where she was working because the doctor, but she was working in a place and they were doing brass rubbings and it's a touristy place and Jude Law came around just as a tourist. Mm. And her co-worker were bantering, and she was kind of like joke putting down her co-worker. And Jude Law stepped in and said, it was like, you shouldn't talk to people like that. That is disrespectful. I'm going to talk to your manager, like blah, 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 blah. Yeah, just completely missing the, you know, the irony.
Oh, right.
Let me just check it was Jude Law, because I do get actors.
Okay.
He
laid down the Jude on that one, didn't he?
I don't get the reference. I just got it. Yep. Sorry, I was being a bit thick there. Yeah,
that's a funnier joke than any joke out of Friends.
It was very funny, and I was too stupid to get it. I'm absolutely ashamed, and it's on video now. Too busy munching snacks and.
But oh yeah, so
thinking about my package.
Ricky Gervais used to have this segment on his radio show called "Oh my God," I don't even like say it right. Called "Cheeky Freak of the Week." Where he used to pick a disabled person in the news who he thought was basically being cheeky, like making fun of them, basically, you know. That would be the bit.
I mean, that was yeah.
But his whole thing, particularly in Extras, was to say, look, I've got a best friend, so I'm not a bad guy. It's just a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was disabled people. Francesca, I forgot her name. She was on it. Disabled people, black people with Sam Jackson, and then the side story with the young British actor as well. You know, it was all just like, look at me. I'm this is edgy and funny because really I've got black friends, so it's not. I'm not racist. I can get
away with this because I've got one standing next to me.
Yeah, basically, and that was
we got one. We hired one. So yeah, we got. What are you gonna do?
And the whole premise of fucking the one that he did with Warwick Davis was that as well.
Yeah. Oh, life's too short.
Mm. Which was quite funny in places, but.
It was wrong, but funny, impressed. Yeah.
And I never watched Derek because that was just immediately like, fucking, that is horrific. And people, you know, and somebody says, oh, you're missing the point. It's meant to... No, it's fucking Ricky Gervais doing that, and he's got a track record of being an actual bigot and horrible person, you know?
I only saw like two episodes of it, but there was a sitcom in the 90s where the main character was agoraphobic.
Oh, I've seen a couple like that.
Can't remember what it was... It was like a very much a lad, you know, 90s lad comedy.
Yeah, there's a few of those kind of things. Men behaving badly. What the fuck was that about?
Oh, that was terrible. I was curious. I was curious. A couple of weeks ago, I was curious. Was that as bad as I remembered it to be? And I watched a few episodes, and yes.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah.
Really like.
The thing is, I like the people in it. Well, not in series one, I didn't. I quite like what's his face. He's all right, you know, in some stuff. I forgot his name. Anyway, but the show itself was just Why does this even exist, you know?
My dad used to enjoy it. I think it was...
It was aimed at men of a certain age to make them think they were trending or something?
I think so. Yeah, I'll make that sort of like relive being young or something like that.
See, I kind of feel a little bit...
A more offensive version likely, lads, you know?
I feel like the Big Bang Theory is a bit like what boomers think millennials are like.
No, because Big Bang's audience is all millennials, I think.
No, it's older. It's the boomers.
Nah. My sister's generation.
There's people older than me that watch it religiously. Mm. I've got friends who are like maybe like, you know, 10 years or so older than me.
I think it started off being a bit more like appealing to millennials, but then I think then the boomers hooked onto it, and I think they started playing to that audience.
Speaking of dad comedy, though, I did recently watch a 4-year-old comedy special by Tim Heidecker. Mm. And like his whole thing is mimic bad comedy, but accentuate the badness to the point where it's funny, ironically, to you know. But one of the comments on YouTube was, "I can actually watch this comedy special with my dad because he laughs at it unironically, and I laugh at it ironically. Like, he's actually laughing at the terrible comedy, and I'm enjoying the presentation of you know this. Yeah, it's very very good." I liked him.
I love the cinema. What's it?
Here's a good. Let's call it a litmus test. Where do you stand on?
I'm sitting, by the way.
Where do you stand on Stuart Lee? I want Drew's answer first, please.
Deeply unfunny, pretentious, wankery.
Chris?
A bit preachy, to be honest. I think he takes the comedy too seriously.
Yeah.
That's meant to be the joke, but he does. Yeah,
he's very interested in the history of comedy, and he does these like semi-documentaries about like you know going back to Victorian comedy and like how important like and it's not shut the fuck up, just be funny.
I'm sure he's made me laugh, quite, you know, a fair bit before. But like
he just overdoes it.
Yeah, because he kind of wants to unsettle, and I think that's a good thing. Because Tim Heidecker, same kind of thing. But he has that bit about I hate Top Gear, and how much he hates Top Gear.
Yeah,
and
he wants them all to die and everything. But then he goes to the camera. I don't really do that. Yes, I do.
In talking about Top Gear so much, he's revealing like how much he's watched Top Gear. Like this is the thing. He's like, and you're supposed to be, the audience likes Top Gear a bit, and you feel uncomfortable. But yeah, it's too far down. It's too much one thing.
Down one rabbit hole, sort of.
It never works for me.
I'm just curious.
My
ex loves it. My ex goes to see him live and stuff. The same one who was told off by Jude Law.
Who laid down the Jude.
I find him a little bit uneasy in the fact that he seems to very very short. Like I always get a bit like not necessarily on edge, but like a bit resistant to people that are that sure in their own opinions. You know,
don't do that to you then.
I think that's part of the act, though.
Maybe I'm not. Yeah, maybe it's intentional, but it's. I don't.
I think that is part of like to unsettle. Yeah, his. But I mean, I don't. I just don't find it funny. I guess fundamentally is the problem.
It's intense.
Or it doesn't make me feel uncomfortable. Like watching Tim Heidecker.
It's very cleverly funny, but not.
Again, it's middle brow. It's too self-consciously clever. Whereas Tim Heidecker doing like, you know, the on cinema thing, it's just so fucking awkward. Like it makes you cringe to watch it, and it's so fucking good at that. And like he's just sort of nails it without it being overblown.
I think that's what annoys me most about Gervais. Is that between him... No, this is the other thing. Gervais is not the fucking genius he thinks he is.
No.
He's worked with Stephen Merchant all the time. And Stephen Merchant is a fucking funny guy. Stephen Merchant is hilarious. He did a few stand-ups and they were fucking funny. They were good.
Okay.
He is as awkward as he seems to be as well. And that's what makes him funny as well. But he's quite, you know, he's quite, you know, he's aware of his, you know, he's aware of awkwardness. Anyway, and the two of them sort of meshed to bring up some brilliantly written stuff. But Gervais was just being Gervais. There was no, you know, there was no, I don't know how to put it. It feels dishonest in a way, even though he's being completely himself. You know, whereas Merchant sort of writes things, he, you know, he can craft it, craft something. Mm. Whereas Gervais just throws things.
I think the thing that revealed to me what Gervais really is, did you ever see that thing when he met Larry David?
No, but I'm vaguely aware of it.
And this is Ricky Gervais going like, you know, I can spar with this, you know, American comedy, great. Yeah, we can spar with each other, both people on it. And Larry Dave, Ricky Gervais is just a fucking clown doing funny voices and like, like giggles and stuff. And Larry David's just being so fucking coldly ironic with him that Gervais doesn't know where he is.
Yeah.
He's just not up there. Like, he's not, he's not clever.
Yeah, I think if Stephen Merchant hadn't been in his life, he would probably have got a couple of things earlier on. But he would have been outed. I mean, he still hasn't technically... He hasn't been outed, really, Gervais. He's making too much money for people at the moment that his trajectory is, you know, still there.
He does have a cameo in The American Office, and he just does the David Brent thing of a Chinese character that he does, and just does a racist Chinese voice. And that's his appearance in The American Office.
I'd imagine it's hilarious, but it's also... he's got Chinese friends, though.
They said it was okay.
The thing is, he does that joke himself as well, without realizing he's fucking doing exactly the thing that he's mocking the characters in his stuff for. Mm. Actually, I wonder how much of that. Again, you don't know when there's a team of people writing something. You never know. Quite often, you think it's one person, it's the other that's written something. Mm. When there's two writers, but the point is that, like, say in Extras, the Bowie episode. Where he talks,
Extras. A total of 5 minutes of Extras.
Well, the Bowie episode's actually pretty good in places, because he does this. Gervais does the thing where he's talking about black. You know, he's like trying to be anti-racist by saying, "Oh, we're talking about black people and yellow, black people and white people and yellow people," and an Asian woman turns and goes, "Who's yellow?" You know, and that's the, like, and he's like, "Oh fuck," but the point is, it's like. Yeah, I don't think that. I don't think it forgives it. It is just, here's, I've got a yellow friend, I've got a black, you know, yellow friend, the worst thing. I've got an Asian friend, I've got a black friend. And, you know, and that, I think he still thinks that is what gets him out of it. You know, he's good at creating the cringe in the setup, between them and the writing, they're good at creating the cringe in the setup, but he doesn't resolve that. And he makes it like, oh, I'm making fun of these people, so that's okay. Because I've got black friends, so it's okay for me to make fun of racists against black people. You know,
I do think there was something to the 80s, the 90s.
You know, it's 33 minutes in and we haven't mentioned The Expanse.
The 90s and early 2000s, like, mocking racism by performing racism and... performing racism in such a way that it looks ridiculous and absurd. I think there was something to that. And I think going back on that,
some of it,
silencing that is, yeah.
Yeah, but it can be a crutch, right? Like that, you know.
That's the problem, yeah. Yeah, I think in Gervais's case, it's like, it allows me to be racist. It allows me to say these naughty things that I'm thinking.
Yeah, basically, yeah. He's actually still thinking and and holding these things and, you know, holding these opinions and... One more thing, you've put me onto another tangent now. I think I might have to stop this and upload this as a separate thing.
No.
Oh, no, nope. Right. People that are coming for the Expanse episode are going to have to wait 35 minutes to get to it. So the other thing I was going to say was...
they don't really come for the Expanse, they come for this.
They come for this. They come for the arguments and the discussions. Did you ever watch Goodness Gracious Me? That was another 90s mainstay.
Oh.
Never watched it? Oh, you're a bit younger.
I saw a few episodes. I love that. Yeah, that's good.
It was brilliant. It was an Asian sketch comedy show. The actors, some of our best British actors are now. And fuck me.
Absolutely.
Some brilliant British actors.
It felt like It felt like
mid-brow,
a British,
isn't it? It's mid-brow, isn't it, Drew?
Oh, it's mid-brow.
But it felt like a British Asian comedy made for white people.
Yeah, well, that was the point. It was educating people through comedy in a way.
Yeah, and I like the bit where Asian people go to a white restaurant, as it were.
And have an English. Yeah. I mean, that's classic. That is a classic British sketch.
That is a classic.
That's up with all the 70s big ones.
In fact, I think that's a better sketch than Reeves and Mortimer's. Was it the
I'll,
one?
I'll go
the
yes
kitchen?
For that because I agree with you. I love Reeves. Well, I like Vic Reeves and I love Bob Mortimer. Never liked any of the shows.
Oh, yeah.
It was very much that 90s absurd. It was just pure absurdism. Mm. But no, I think if you want a sort of I don't know how to phrase this correctly, but like a non-white comedy show that was good and was true to what it was claiming to represent. I can't remember the name of it, but that Channel 4 one set in a black barbershop.
Desmond's was also excellent.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know.
That was great.
You don't know
that
Desmond's? Go and see it.
That didn't feel like it was for... Because if it's people of color performing for a white audience and performing their race for a white audience, that is a minstrel show.
No. Right. I'll take offense on behalf of all the brilliant actors and writers.
I think they're all great. They're all great comedians.
I don't think, goodness gracious, it was a minstrel show. It was.
That's how it felt.
No, I think you need to watch more of it. There was an aspect of that, but that was deliberate. It was very deliberate.
And Desmond didn't feel
they
like
had
that.
Lots and lots. This is the thing. If you go back and watch Goodness Gracious Me, there's loads of stuff that's just fucking silly, you know, good comedy.
Yeah.
But people pick up and remember the race-based stuff because that was, you know, impactful at the time.
No, because anyway. What I did watch, and I did catch the odd episode. It did. Anyway, I'll leave it there. It just did seem to be minstrelly to me.
Okay.
I don't think it would have been allowed to be anything completely the other way.
Well, Desmond's was.
At the time.
But
Desmond's is very under the radar. But Desmond's... Desmond's, go and watch Desmond's. It's great. Pork pie is such a great character. It's basically... The thing I don't like about Desmond's... Here we go. The thing I don't like about Desmond's, it's the London show.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And
yeah,
that's kind of the... That's why I'm not, like, so big on Desmond's that I would have, go out of my way to keep watching it and stuff.
Yeah, I don't like that stuff. That's too
but
much,
it's a very anyway, London yeah. show.
I've heard of The Expanse. That is a good show of television.
My package arrived as well.
Oh, nice big package. Hamish's nice
that'll
big
be,
package.
I'll have to, I mean, you guys can hang around for a second video if you want when we do the unboxing, or stream if you want. Yeah. If you want. But right now... I was going to say, I said something earlier and I said holding, but I said it like Holden, and I was going to segue into The Expanse then, but I had to finish my sentence.
We don't do fucking segues here, Hamish. Where the fuck do you think you are?
It was in the script.
Yeah, is this ITV?
So there's a sci-fi show called The Expanse. That was something I wanted. Right back at the start of this section, so half an hour ago, I wanted to ask, does anybody know what terrestrial channel shows The Expanse, if any? Is it like it feels like a BBC
no
Two
idea.
Late Night
yeah.
thing, maybe? Or Channel 4?
I
have
no clue. I'll find out, actually.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Channel 4, I would think.
I mean, it says sci-fi on the thing. I don't know what that,
Yeah, but that's the like cable or satellite channel.
Mm. Also, okay, I need to be maybe on the right...
Other side.
There we go.
Hang on. I'll
Brax, he's plant. Oh,
I'm going to zoom you for the audience.
Oh, excellent. Plant guy's not messing around.
That's a lock and
also,
load.
Hang on. Melancholy music. my subtitles always.
Chris,
can
you duck? Can you duck completely? For a minute. Yeah.
Melancholy music.
Yeah, melancholy music. And Francois Chau is the name on the screen at the moment. Remember I said to you that Jean-Pierre Mao has a French and Chinese sounding name? That's who he is, Francois Chau. Francois Chau.
Oh, okay. I mean, Chau could sounds like it could be French.
Mm. I don't think it was on TV in the UK from what I can find.
All right.
What about Sky?
No, I didn't see. It seems to be just
that's streaming. Not real TV, though.
Oh, okay. All right, gotcha.
There are five channels.
Five channels.
Well, as far as I know, it's still five.
That's quite modern. Quite a modern take on that for you.
Fair enough.
Hamish is talking about the radio.
I'll be honest, I'm not sure I've ever seen much Channel 5 at all. Had a telly, or was it... No, I think it existed when I had a telly, but...
It was there in the 90s, long. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a documentary on Channel 5 called 101 Worst Sexual Accidents.
Was Drew on it?
I don't think so, but they anonymised some of the names, so you never know for sure. Mm. But oh my god,
1997 it launched.
Mm. Yeah, I was probably not paying much attention to TV at that point. Mm.
But there were there were these lads that poured concrete in each other's bums.
What, to make a cast or something?
I guess that was the rationale behind it, but
it's not an accident, though, is it?
Okay, what? That's the bit you're going to pick up on.
What, the outcome was not intentional, I guess, makes it an accident.
What I like is when people try to do things with plaster of Paris and don't realize that it really fucking heats up when it's reacting.
Yeah. There are a lot of people putting melons in microwaves and burning their junk off.
I've cast my face in plaster of Paris and it...
I'm sorry, wait a minute. Melons in microwaves, then burning their junk off. What the fuck are you talking about?
Putting the dick in it.
I got that connection, but what's the microwave got to do with it?
To make it warm, like a live human. But if you overdo
like
it...
Like apple pie isn't sort of...
It gets hot.
Yeah, don't try that at home, though, because like the microwave and the water particles...
Disclaimer,
and
Give it a go and let us know what happens.
There was one person that was late at night. He was fucking the air jets of a swimming pool and he got sucked on. Just like... Shoop,
and they had
to bring the fire brigade people to...
This isn't sexual as such, but my flatmate, when I was at uni, went to the toilet, zipped his fly up, caught his foreskin in his zip, to the point where he just ripped it all up, and he had to
You've talked with us before.
Yeah.
Emergency circumcision at the hospital.
Oh my god.
Circumcision, not fun.
Have you heard the famous Tinder date story where...
When the woman throws her poo out the window?
Yes.
Sorry, what? Out the window?
Okay, so basically these young couple, I think they're students, they go on a Tinder date.
I just heard what Hamish said retroactively, and go on.
But use
grown-up words.
Okay, alright. So things were going well. They were going back to the guy's apartment. I think they were students.
She had to go potty.
She had to lay some brick, and it wouldn't go down the toilet or something for some reason. So she picked up the brick, and she threw it out the window. However, there was like a double section of window, and it fell in between the two windows. So she tried to lean over, pick up the poo, and throw it away. But she got stuck, and then I think the fire brigade had to come round, and apparently they went on a second date.
I mean, I would.
It's a story. Yeah.
Well,
nowhere near that. But again, at uni, I was living in a house in the first year, and the room bit below me was a bedroom. It was previously the dining room, but it was a bedroom when we lived there. We come home drunk. I needed a piss, but my friend had fallen asleep in the toilet, like literally in the sort of his head in the toilet, with the bathroom door locked. So I just opened my bedroom window and pissed out of my window. And then next morning, the person who lived below me literally said over breakfast, it's really weird last night. It rained really hard for a really short time.
That's amazing. Oh dear me. Is it like how good is it for the garden to piss on the flowers?
No. It's not good because of urethra. Urea.
So it's bad for plants to piss on the garden. Yeah. Okay.
This was on a patio, to be fair. I was just weeding.
But I was just wondering, because I'm a big fan of Adrian Charles and the art.
Two things. I thought you were going to say you were a big fan of water sports piss play or whatever.
No.
My ex-wife used to have water sports as a hobby on her CV.
But Adrian Charles writes some great articles, and like the light op-ed pieces about just the small musings of lifetime. And he wrote an article that changed my life. He was talking about how he had a urinal installed in his personal
home. You've told us this one before, yeah. It's a weird one.
It's a weird one.
I don't see the benefit.
It's a designed for purpose thing.
But doesn't he have a family who includes female people and people who want to take a crap, you know?
Not in place of the toilet, I imagine. I imagine there's also a toilet.
Yeah.
But it's marginally easier to piss in a urinal than a TV, than a toilet.
No. Since we're down this rabbit hole and the episode's never going to get to the expanse properly anyway, I might as well tell you there was one time. Now, this is a third-hand story, but I know the people involved and I know it's true. There was one friend of a friend who would get really drunk and then sleepwalk. And one time he'd been out drinking like of an afternoon, so it was still daytime. But he'd come home sort of late afternoon, early evening, fell asleep. And he got up and he lived with his parents. And his parents had visitors in, and there was like two middle-aged couples basically sitting in the living room with the TV on. He came in, sleepwalking, went up to the back of the TV, pissed on it. The thing went, and it's an old CRT TV, everything went fucking, went on fire and shit. And he just waddled off back to bed. Totally unaware of what he'd done.
Badass.
And it wasn't even that he drank a lot. He just drank enough to make himself a bit sleepy, and he sleepwalks anyway. So it wasn't even a drunk story as much as it was a...
I mean, he could have killed him. Could he have electrocuted himself?
Yes.
There's discussion about that. But yes, urine is very conductive, yeah.
Are we actually going to go into the expanse? Because I'm just going to take a space piss before we...
I need a cup of tea.
I mean, As I say, we can make this a separate thing, bonus.
This could be an Easter egg,
bonus on the DVD.
No, this is.
So now you two are going to leave me alone.
No, yep. Drew, put the tea on, and I'll talk to Hamish about opal fruits and marathon bars.
Okay, and then we'll take turns. Okay, I'll be right back.
Right, okay, yeah,
fucking marathon.
Do you know, they say that MASH was the season finale of MASH was the most watched?
Yeah, it was one of the most watched things ever, yeah. Well, Friends, a lot of people talk about MASH. They even reference it, and I think it's in The Simpsons, they reference it.
Yeah.
Because they talk about, it's one of those flashback episodes where they reference the 80s or the early 80s, and it's like, it is in The Simpsons, because there's a character, for some reason they live in a weird 1930s... or 1920s Italian neighborhood, but I can't remember there was just the joke for getting some bad, some stuff in. Anyway, point is, there's a woman who goes, there's people talking about, MASH finished, and then there's a woman who goes, I miss the Klinger already. I don't know why, but anyway, point is that my generation, if you like, MASH finishing was Cheers finishing. And it's weird because it finished, the bar had an established 19 whatever sign, or 18 something, and it would have been like 100 years or something if they'd just gone for one more year. It was like really...
Oh, really?
It was quite annoying, Hang on.
Yeah.
Let's look it up. Cheers. But, it was the will they, won't they... romantic stuff plus the sort of it had a lot of the setups, and
I can't help but feel that if by today's sort of sensibilities that a lot of the stuff that went on in Cheers would be considered very bad.
I don't think it's that bad. It's very. I think it was a bit more. What's the word now? I don't want to use the word quaint because that makes it sound a bit too nice. But it was a lot of sort of my mother-in-law. It was basically that kind of thing, you know, take my wife, please. You know, it was that sort of. There was a lot of that sort of humour in it. 1895, the bar was established.
Oh yeah.
So it finished in 1994, I believe.
I'll always reserve that. I'll always reserve that. Frasier is better than Cheers, though. I gotta point that one out.
Oh no, 1993 it finished. Sorry.
Mid-brow. I don't think I mind mid-brow. I like mid-brow.
I mean, Cheers.
There's nothing inherently wrong with mid-brow. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's not even Rhea a thing. Rhea Perlman was hilarious.
Absolutely a thing.
George Whitehouse.
QI is mid-brow.
QI. Is mid-brow. QI started mid-brow and is now low, or became low-brow over time. The more that curly, fucking, unfunny, curly-haired fucking cunt gets to talk, the worse the show gets.
But I take it that you don't like Alan Davies.
His all that, oh, I don't know anything, I'm so stupid.
Well, that's quite a good voice, actually.
Yeah.
No, I hate that.
Cheers had Kirstie Alley when she was hot.
QI, when it started out, became a celebration. A celebration of esoteric knowledge, and that was great. Mm-hmm. And then over time, it just became an anti-intellectual, like, take the piss out of people who know things and being stupid is
we
cool.
We think they know things. Mm-hmm.
What about Only Connect? We've had this one, haven't we?
Have you seen QI since Sandy Toksvig took over? I think it changed the flavor of it quite a lot.
I like Sandy Toksvig.
I think it took it back a bit.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I think so. I think she was. I think Stephen Fry had run his course, and
I think even he knew that, though. You know.
Oh yeah, you can only do something for so long.
And
before
the dynamic between Alan Davies and Sandy Toksvig is completely different as well.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, he's still on it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't mind him. Did you ever watch Jonathan Creek?
No, I didn't. Anyway, I'll bring it back.
Enough to know that I never want to watch it ever again.
Okay. I thought I liked it because I like that sort of weird mystery thing. He's going for a space piss.
He's literally walking.
Go away, fuck off. Yeah, so 50 minutes of show so far. And
I mean, we have mentioned The Expanse.
We've got melancholy music on the screen again. I suppose one thing we mentioned before we started this episode was that it's a great episode.
A very good episode.
But there's only a couple of big things that happen, so there isn't as much to discuss as there was in the build-up-y episode, which is quite interesting. So maybe we won't have that much to say as such.
This is still kind of a build. It does the thing that The Expanse does, where there's so many things, there's so many sort of plot lines going on, and some of them terminate before others, so they don't all come together at the end.
This is true, yeah. It's not written deliberately to be like a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Although it gets more that way after this series. Series 4 onwards are sort of single series arcs, really, aren't they?
Because, spoiler for those watching along. It never gets bad, but it's never as good as this again.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3 are the peaks. But it's worth watching all the way to the end, definitely.
Is that Johnson's Creek?
It's still way better than most TV shows will ever be. Even at its, you know, at its not goodest.
Amy's just talking about The American Office.
We're talking about The Expanse, actually.
You know
he's going to be able to see this back, so there's no point in lying to him. Although quite often it's funny. So,
the Martian people that they rescue make it back. To their, is it their? This the flagship of the fleet in the Jupiter belt.
Yeah, the Hammurabi.
Hammurabi.
That's Hammurabi. Hang on,
Hammurabi. Yeah,
it'll be here somewhere. Hammurabi. Yeah, which is named after
Mesopotamian king, right? The laws of Hammurabi.
Are Martian ships typically captained by a level-headed woman?
Babylonian and then king.
With the first mate being some snarky, mildly aggressive bloke.
It seems to be a pattern, yeah. And I love The captain of the captain of the Hammurabi. I love her character. She's great.
She's great.
She's fucking great. If I was on a ship, I want to be on her ship. She's level headed as shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's also I thought she was quite cute as well.
Yeah, and it's and obviously for, like the first mate or whatever, he's like
Lieutenant Durant.
He's of a different mindset, but like he doesn't try and like he's not trying to be like Aaron Wright or like manipulate.
Well, my understanding, like... and this is largely informed by TV shows and movies, but my understanding of a first officer is that they're supposed to sort of challenge a little bit what the captain, like offer alternatives, be a little bit devil's advocacy kind of thing to make sure that the captain's thought of every, you know.
Yeah.
But then when the captain makes their decision, they're like,
on site. Yeah. Well, and also it's worth mentioning the guy who plays Durant is Doral from Battlestar Galactica, as I mentioned last episode, in an unintentional spoiler.
Mm. Oh, we did actually mention something. We thought it was
spoil.
Less, yeah, the child. Alex's child messaging him. It didn't happen until this episode.
Yeah.
We thought it was in the previous one.
No.
I thought that was all in the same fucking episode.
I thought
episode.
It was this episode or last episode as well, yeah.
I know you hate that child.
It's those little side things that you mix up more than the main things, I think.
Oh, I thought it didn't... What did you say about the kid?
I think I jokingly said something. Like I didn't mean
it. Oh, right. I actually kind of like the kid because it's like...
I thought it was a prick. Just for balance. I mean,
okay. I mean, there was a little bit of this is pod racing about him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But. Oh, sorry. I'm wearing a Star Wars t-shirt. So I shouldn't be. But I mean, this, you know.
But I mean, I just kind of like the fact, I don't know, like it felt like a good moment, you know, like.
Yeah. My problem with it is Alex doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like it redeemed something about Alex that he didn't deserve.
I don't think I'm totally on board with that. Like Alex is irredeemable.
I'm not sure. You see. I've never had a father. I mean, I lived with my biological father for like most of my early life, but I've never had a father, and I've just never seen the attachment to fathers. I've just never had one, and it's weird for me watching these things. Sorry. You know, no, I was just going to say it. I just find it strange that you know, boys are supposed to worship their dad or whatever, and I just I think through mine very, very early.
This gets a bit, you know, gender binary, blah, blah, blah. But I think boys, like, your mother is so fucking important.
Yeah, it's true.
Because, you know, for our generation, you know, your dad was off to work. It was your mum who looked after you and, you know. And I think that's all of it, even. Yeah, just I do think there's a natural, maybe not natural, but there's a something going on with, like, fathers and daughters and mothers and sons.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
there are exceptions to that, for sure, but, you know.
But yeah, no, I'm definitely like a mummy's boy. My sister's more on my dad's side.
Yeah, same with mine. Yeah, but I mean, I love my dad, but he I don't know, but like it was a more distant thing than my mother.
Yeah.
I was going to say as well. The other thing is, of course, he sees Alex as being away doing heroic things rather than being an absent father. You know, I think that's kind of the naivety of the kid as well, you know.
But he can enjoy that naive moment, right? Like,
let him have
I don't begrudge the kid his happiness.
We don't have to tell him that Santa Claus doesn't exist, right? You know, it's just like...
Well, apparently a vicar did that recently. Stood up in front of a group of people worshipping an imaginary figure and told the kids that another imaginary figure wasn't real, you know.
Well, I believe
that's what makes me laugh about all these things is like people say, that's superstition and, you know, that's nonsense or what have you. But with absolutely the same level of evidence, here's our real thing, you know.
The thing you say Hamish.
I believe in them both, so I'm unimpingeable on this issue.
I'll tell you what, Hamish, that was the thing when I was, must have been about like 8 or 9-ish, that sent me down the road to atheism.
Yeah.
Is it's like,
once you realize like, it's all exactly the same. There's no
Santa Claus and Jesus. Yeah, same fucking thing, right? Like,
no, but meaningfully, Santa Claus does exist. as a cultural phenomenon and as an underpinning of our cultural and philosophical understanding of blah blah blah. Like it, and that's to me that's
the same way for kids. It's better for kids. Actually, no, that's not fair. The Jesus myth is good for kids to a point.
To a point.
Because it's basically sort of teaching them socialism and respect for other people.
If it's done properly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Jesus myth does that. That's what the Jesus myth does. It's just not what people use.
I mean, there are plenty of Jesus passages in the Bible. There's loads of
people call themselves Christians who are basically just quoting from the old book.
Jesus has been a bit washed, right? There are bits...
Well, he's a white guy with a blonde beard most of the time, for a start.
I mean, more specifically, there are bits in the Bible that talks about quite violent stuff, even from Jesus' point of view. Like,
Yeah. I mean, violence, yeah, but political revolutionary violence. I mean, all of the... I think all of the dodgy stuff is in the Old Testament.
Not all of the old stuff. Like, there's more dodgy stuff. But
I don't think there's any dodgy stuff directly associated with Jesus.
I'm pretty sure there is. I can't quote anything off the top of my head, but I know.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember all the stuff where think about the Roman stuff where it was stolen from, then you've got there are some stories, some parts of it. Well, but they miss out a lot of those parts in the New Testament deliberately. You know, the story's still there. The story still exists because it's a story that's been told like three or four times before that human mythology anyway, but
I always have a giggle when people quote the NIV because I don't think of that as a real Bible. I think that's the children's Bible.
You know the King James Bible, the one that sort of more traditional Christians like, and it's got all the thous and these and at the time it was written, people didn't speak like that. It was written to sound archaic at the time it was written, which I think is worth bearing in mind.
Yeah.
Well, it's all manipulation. It's all,
It's all. Anybody
that calls themselves Christian these days, I've never met somebody who openly calls themselves a Christian who had any Christian values. They were always the most racist, bigoted, classist. Classist people that I've ever known. And I mean, I remember going to church when I was young, and there'd be like some slightly scruffier people at the back of the church or whatever, and you'd see the people who were sitting there in all the finery on a Sunday looking at them and going, God, imagine coming to church like that, you know? And like, are you fucking... Do you listen to the fucking guy telling you the imaginary people's stories in front of you, you know? Or do you just come to be seen, you know? Oh, wait a minute, you just come to be seen. But yeah, there was born again are the worst, because that's basically what the American fundamental Christian is.
I don't think that should be considered Christianity at that point.
Well, no, because there's no Christian. There's nothing in it that's Christian at all. But the point is that I knew one family who were born again Christians, as it were, in our little village, and they were the most horrific anti-Christian people, you know, the lot. And get this, one of their grandchildren, who was about my age, his nickname was Jew because his family were born again Christians. That's kid logic for you right there, isn't it?
Hang on, his nickname was Jew
because his family were born again Christians. There's just no logic to that whatsoever, but that's kids for you, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
Well, it's different from Catholics and Protestants, wasn't it? That was the point.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay,
I think that was the logic. It was what's different from Catholics and Protestants?
I mean, they're still Protestants, the born-agains.
Yeah, I know.
They're just even more wrong than your average Protestant.
Oh, my God. Yes. This is not a religious podcast.
No, it's an anti-religious podcast.
I'm anti superstition of all kinds. I think, you know, and it's the fundament of anti intellectualism and anti science and stuff as well. It's the same. It's all drinking from the same fucking bucket of slop. But what was I going to say? Oh yeah, the other one I was going to say is this is nicknames thing. There was a community centre in the town where the big town next to where I grew up, where I went to school, and there was one guy whose dad worked there as a janitor, and it was called the Beaumar Centre. I don't know if it still exists. It's in Alloa, the Beaumar Centre, and there was one kid at our school whose dad worked there as a janitor. So this kid's nickname was Centre.
Centre.
Because his dad worked at the Beaumar Centre.
Oh,
so that was his. That was somehow his nickname, and that went on for like years. You know, it's like, and people, you know, of course, people never question it after it happens. You're like,
I like.
Do you play football or something?
No, yeah. They go, oh, yeah. There's probably all sorts of theories about his name. I don't know if he kept it up. His name's Kevin.
You need a nickname if you're Kevin, definitely. Kevin is such a boring name. Kev
sounds all right, though.
Kev is okay.
There was at least two Pauls in my class. There was two classes in each year at my school. And there was two Pauls, I think. Two Pauls in my class and two Pauls in the other class.
Oh, there was at least two Andrews in every class I was in. Like
there was one Andrew, definitely, in our year. Andy McAvinny. Sorry. Are you allowed to say people's names on internet? Yeah. I don't know. He was an okay guy. Yeah.
I don't know if I was ever the only Chris in a class.
No, there was definitely.
We do all have very, very boring Anglo names.
Yeah. Well, and Catholic school. It's, you know, it's all saints' names, isn't it? You know. Although the girls had a bit more of a mixture of names. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my parents just went for a boring name because, like, to avoid bullying, right? Like, you don't want to be called Apple or Cradle or
all of Daddy's friends are called shit like that. Fucking Cloud and Sky Cloud. And Mountain. I don't know. Yeah, it's so fucking. And American names where they've taken two English names and just like mushed them together.
Could you ever think of a child being called something like a last name but for a first name, like Asimov Jones?
No, see, that was a joke in my school because my surname used to be Crawford. It's not anymore. I changed it when I was 22, 21. Yeah. That's my. Oh, I've now actually given everybody my birth father's name because I gave you his first name in another episode, didn't I?
Yeah. And your full name.
And he's a cunt, so, you know.
What was your mother's maiden name and your first pet?
What was my first pet? Her maiden name, yeah.
Your pet's first maiden name.
First pet's maiden name. But actually, I almost told you my mum's maiden name previously for a reason, but I didn't go into it. I'll tell you off air, actually. I'll tell you that one afterwards. But yeah, the other thing I was gonna say was about names was because so Billy Connolly made a joke about first names, surnames being used as first names at one point, and it was Crawford and Fergus were the two that he picked out of the air to do. And of course, so my surname is Crawford, and people never called you by your first name. They always call you know, if you've not got a nickname, you get called by your surname. And so that became a bit of a derisory thing as well. It's like, oh, Crawford, you know. Like,
I think we should go back to that. We should go back to that calling people by their surnames. I enjoy that.
But you got a double-barreled surname.
Not double-barreled, just two syllables.
I'm not sure what to make of that.
I don't have a double-barreled surname.
What's your surname?
Holgate.
Holgate, yeah. I was going to say, I've tried to find it here because I've...
I thought there was something on the end of that. Why did I think there was something on the end of that?
That'd be plus another one would be awful. It's a mouthful already.
Yeah.
Holgate. I think everybody
knows your name. Nobody ever calls you Christopher, which is interesting. Because
I do now and then.
I'll occasionally do it but nobody says Christopher Ware.
Yeah.
That's like four syllables.
It's a lot of syllables. And you know what it reminded me? Earlier on when we were talking about, because this is what it reminds me of, because we were talking about taxi, Christopher Lloyd. Chris Ware, when you say it in full, reminds me of Christopher Lloyd. Because when you try to remember people's names, actors' names and stuff, it's like, oh, it's a big one, long first name, and then a little short second name.
Oh, it's never Chris Lloyd, is it? Like,
No.
I bet people in his life call it Christopher Ware.
Chris Lloyd has got a good sound to it, though. Chris Lloyd. I like that.
Well, she was a tennis player. Chris Everett was married to John Lloyd? Hang on. Now I'm going to have to look. This episode is never going to get to fucking.
Sure.
Chris Everett was married to. Personal life. Here we go. Oh, she had a romance with Jimmy Connors. Maybe I'm mixing people. John Lloyd. She married John Lloyd, yeah. And it was Chris Everett Lloyd. But that was Chris Lloyd, or Christine, presumably. Christine Lloyd. Anyway, sorry.
All right, let's do some Expanse, shall we?
Okay. We're warmed up enough.
Yeah, we're almost at the length of some of our shortest Expanse shows at the moment. Good luck to everyone trying to get through this one and find anything out about the Expanse.
But you know, Hamish and I have said that this episode, I love this episode. It's a really good episode.
I loved it. It's a great episode.
It's a great episode of TV. But I have very few notes for it because it's kind of lots of big things rather than lots of, you know, several
big things. It's a few big things that happen rather than a lot of little things.
Although there's a lot of technical things.
Yeah. I do get to, because we're on, let's go back to the first scene. Talking about the Hammurabi and the three people returned, and the line that I love is he's talking. Basically, he's going through the what he went through. You know, the young guy.
And I love that you can see him get more embarrassed as he goes on.
And he's telling a story of we got on this ship and we got rescued by this Martian ship, except it wasn't Martians that were on it. It was
James Holden.
James Holden, the fucking famous at the moment, and his crew of another Earther, another Martian, and a Belter. Okay, Then they fixed our ship, even though we tried to kill them and let us go. Okay. But also on the ship was a Martian Marine. Right. And Christian Avasarala, the third in command of Earth, was on this ship as well. It's like, who else was there? The fucking Tooth Fairy? That's what the guy says. Like, you know.
It's a good line. It's not even just a Martian Marine. He's a Martian Marine.
Oh, it's the Martian Marine who's the defector.
Oh, the defector.
The defector,
Yeah,
it's him reeling it off. After the kid says it and gets more and more embarrassed, it's the second officer the first officer then like reeling it, you know, replying to it all in the background.
There's some great moments like that. That again, just a bit part. He's in two episodes. The kid, and he is acting there when he's just looking more and more sheepish as he realizes his story is becoming more and more implausible.
Yeah, it sounds like he's just made shit up just to.
It's great, explain. just acting with an expression, and then the moment later on when he's talking to the captain, and she's asking, "What did you think of Avasarala?" And he goes, "She was mean." She was mean at the start, and then he goes, "I think I liked her." Just like his facial expression, the way he just got a few lines and he delivers them fucking perfectly.
Yeah.
Ensign Sinopoli. Not to be confused with Monopoly, but he's only in a little bit. Yeah.
Good job, that actor. Well fucking done.
The actor is called Atticus Mitchell.
Oh, what a fucking name!
Presumably named after Atticus Finch, I would imagine.
Possibly, yeah. Mm.
And then his surname named after, of course, Phil Mitchell.
That's like a late 19th century US president name.
It's a bit, wasn't Atticus Finch named after a president?
Yeah, didn't he get that name? Not a president, but he's named after somebody, wasn't he? I mean, Atticus was a Roman something, a Roman general or something originally. Like, that's where the name. Anyway, I think.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I think you're right there. Anywho,
and we learned that they've got they've got like a general both sides WhatsApp group that they can.
It's general communication. It's, you know, even in wartime, people have people still have accidents and things, and they have to if we struck an iceberg, we're sinking, please help us, because there's presumably still lots 90s, of civilian ships around
in 90s warfare. It was ICQ, of course. We didn't have WhatsApp yet.
Do you know where ICQ comes from?
ICQ,
yeah, but do you know where that comes from?
Britney Spears.
English
Britney Spears, what the fuck. You 90s prick. No, ICQ comes from radio. It's like how they, it's the, you know, when people think it's all breaker, you know, what do you call it, CB stuff, that's all bollocks, most of it, made up by a subgroup. But no, ICQ is like, I'm looking for someone on the radio. ICQ.
That's cool, I didn't know that.
And that's where ICQ, the program, got its name from.
So, but also I imagine that they like exchanged the dead or something like that.
Yeah, so I suspect there's a lot of things happen during warfare where they still need to communicate. Yeah, it's ridiculous, and what's the word I'm looking for? Surreal, I suppose. In a way, it's like the Christmas armistice bollocks. It's like you guys now realize you have the power to do this. You don't have to listen to the one fucking madman telling you what to do because a line of ten madmen are telling him what to do. You know?
I like the bit in Kunk where she talks about that, and I don't remember the wording, but like something like, and even when they could put the war aside, they still had to, like, it was always still men competing with each other.
Like. Yeah, I mean, I think that armistice thing is all propaganda, right? Like,
I think it was a real event, but it was one event. But yeah, I think even as a kid, I was like, well, stop. Like, why go back to fighting?
Yeah.
If you realise you can fucking stop, stop.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, it's like, why would you do that? Yeah. So basically, to get back to the point a wee bit.
WhatsApp
group, yeah. So what they're meant to do is use the space WhatsApp to get in touch with Admiral Sousa. And pass on the message. Now, the thing that's important, I think, some people have missed this in the show, and I think you two get it, but the point of that that Aaron Wright recording is it's not just a video. There's proof that where it came from and everything, because it was type-beamed and signed, or whatever you want.
It's a comms buffer.
It's a comms log. Like a entire log. Yeah, so it proves that it's a real message, hasn't been tampered with, that this is what happened and what have you. Although I don't like the fact that it degrades when they copy it. It's like, it's digital.
I think it came in like that. It was just interference when it came out. I'm not 100% on that.
If there was interference in the incoming signal, that would be recorded as well. Okay, yeah, fair enough. I'll let that go.
Not 100% about that, but I think that's what it
is. I don't, it's not enough for me to make a spoon.
Or maybe they have to drop down to 240p
to transfer it on the little cards. You know.
They've not updated their video codecs for a long time.
No. So basically the story is like ridiculous, but they know who Souther is. And then the captain takes the message from the ensign and says, "Nah, I don't think this could be faked."
I've got a question about that. Is she, because she does deliver it
eventually? Is
she performing for a second in command, or does she have a change of heart?
I think she's just thinking it over, personally. I think she's just not wanting to make a snap decision on it. And have the people... She doesn't want... Like, see, when somebody's in front of you, even if they're a subordinate, it's difficult to refuse somebody when they seem reasonable, even though it's ridiculous, it seems reasonable, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think she just wanted it away from both sides, you know, both the kid telling her and her second in command, you know, countering it as well.
I think there's a little bit of false reassurance for a second in command, because he's clearly
I think you're right there. I think she was thinking about it more than she was thinking about not doing it.
I think so.
But she was also not going to make a snap decision, is my...
Well, she's got to think about the consequences as a result of that, because it's a big decision, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's communication during wartime, and she could be unknowingly delivering digitally encoded intelligence that helps them destroy every Martian ship or something. You know, it's like,
I think she's the best captain we've seen so far.
What, even over the Doniger captain? Actually, we didn't see much of the Doniger captain, so I think you're right.
Oh yeah, no, Doniger captain was very hubristic.
Yeah, she was the one that thought, without reason, given the situation. How can we lose?
But the captain here might have learned that lesson from the Doniger.
For sure. But you know, that's what she is when we encounter her. And I think, at this point, I think she's like I say, if I was on a ship, I want to be on her ship. She seems to...
Yeah.
Well, it's a ship we don't see getting destroyed. It's got that going for it. Yeah. And let's be honest, that's because Holden never got it. Holden should just be called fucking Jonah. It really should, you know? Because even the Rossinante's been like pretty much, completely disabled at least twice so far or something, you know? It's like,
He's an albatross.
At this point, I think Fred Johnson says it's more ours than yours now, because it's basically a ship of Theseus situation.
It's Trigger's broom.
That's the midbrow way of saying.
Midbrow.
Right, I put Brian Johnson up on the screen just so everybody can see who we're talking about.
That's good.
That is Brian Johnson for the audience, the singer from AC/DC. Right.
Or the Liver King. I'll get a picture of the Liver King for you know.
Oh my god! What in?
Oh dear.
Okay. The Liver King is a thing, apparently. Chris isn't just making it up.
He's an online grifter.
I don't want to put a picture of a grifter up then.
Okay, no. Although
having said that, we put pictures of Gervais up. So.
All right.
Oh,
all right,
fucking of hell! Oh, he's not. He looks better in some pictures than when he was younger, but as he's got older, he's not aged well.
He's. I don't know if this is a new or an old picture, but.
That's kind of a middle one from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, but he's. But he is a grifter, so I'm not.
Like, why is he the Liver King? Does he eat liver?
Oh, he eats lots of liver and raw meat and all that kind of stuff.
Liver's very nice.
But the point is, he works out fucking loads. That's what people see. These people say, "Oh, you eat this food and everything." No, these supplements will make your muscles go.
Yeah.
No, you've still got to fucking break the fibers of the muscle and heal them. That's how you. That's how you build muscle.
He's definitely been caught on steroids. Like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, that as well. that's another way. There are drug ways to do it. Yeah, but food doesn't make you muscly. You know,
but, I mean, you do need a particular diet when you're bodybuilding like that as well. But it's not the food on its own.
That's my point. It's like you know, the best word processor in the world isn't going to turn you into William Shakespeare. You know.
Oh really?
And you've also got those monkeys you've got in the other room on the computer.
Yeah.
So
I refer to my family like that.
So mutinies afoot aboard the Agatha King.
That whole section of the whole, you know, mutiny section arc, whatever that is, that is one of my favorite bits of television ever. I love it,
and it's so tragic as well.
Because we celebrated Souther coming back, and then
I
really like Souther. I like he's another. I'd serve under Souther.
I like Schaefer and Mancuso as well. The two senior officers. Mm. I like them as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not usually one to say this, but Souther would be one I'd like to go for a drink with. You know, like I think he could.
He's been seen going for a drink. You know,
Like not
very.
In the
way... He's very like wears his heart on his sleeve. Very honest, very upfront. Which is why he was terrible at that political job.
Yeah, he was so obviously promoted past his.
He's too good a person. I don't think it's about even skill. He's a good person, and you can't be a good person, and you've got to be a little bit grey.
Not in a political system, no.
Yeah.
You can be
a
politician without being a bad person.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
you can't operate within the political systems of humanity that we've had.
You've got to be willing to be underhanded and ruthless, like we all think Abrasarella's a good person, I think, but like she's under, you know, she's.
Mostly. She's definitely full of grey area. If you cut her open, there'd be a lot of grey area.
Yeah. Souther's a better person. Yeah. And to be honest, I might have forgotten or whatever now, but like I don't think his argument was without merit when they were talking about escalation. Like
that's the point though. He was just telling the truth rather than
he was just saying it plainly instead of having an agenda.
Understanding the political situation and that's never going to happen. So play them to make them do the least bad thing rather than, you know.
Abbasarala's play there was perfect. I was going to say it was the perfection for the situation or perfect for the situation. Abbasarala's play of destroying a Martian base to make the tit-for-tat thing even was all that was. It didn't have to be that base, but it had to be something, and that's what Souther wasn't getting. That there was no way to just be, you know, being the bigger man doesn't appease the masses. You can be as right as you want, but if the masses feel that they've been attacked, well, no. You see what? No, actually, I think I've just lied to myself. I think if you could appeal to the masses and say, look, we've got to stop this because this was terrible, the thing that happened to us, but it was a small thing. It's unfortunate that, you know, people died and whatever. This is terrible, but you don't need to kill 15 Martians because they killed 15 Earthers. It's not, that doesn't bring anybody back.
I,
I think you can sell that message.
But no, but you couldn't within the framework that you had because you've got people at everywhere.
I think you can make that. You can make that case to the public, and I think you could get the public on board with that. The point is that you know you're dealing with politicians who are, for the most part, egotistical babies, like President Mann. And they're not about doing what's right or good. Or so Ava Sorella is a good person, I think. She's about doing,
but she's much more pragmatic than
the best. Best that she can get this government to do, rather than you know dying on a hill and being pushed aside.
Yeah,
I think that's fair.
Ironically enough, though, Souther's position that he gets to is what stops the war.
Yeah, I don't know.
Getting back into a ship and being in the thick of it is where the war stops. It stops with the two captains of the ships eventually communicating.
And fundamentally, because he and Ava Sorella work together to stop the war, you need both of them. You need
Ava Sorella can do it by herself, but with Ava Sorella sending the message to Souther and I forgot her name, Novodovodov.
Rubber dub dub. What is happening?
I'm going mad. That's what's happening. I forgot her freaking name, and that's what's the problem here.
Whose name?
Volodov.
Her name is Priest Lady.
Yeah, I can see why you two do that, to be honest. It's only fair. Well, she's not in this episode.
No.
No.
Which is why I can't find her name in the credits. Because she's not one of the main.
Fingerprints are all over it.
They are, yeah.
Oh, God. I'm well chuffed with that thumbnail. Why did God have to make me so beautiful?
I like that her wife shoots her down. I mean, we said this in the episode last one. But yeah, I love that her wife shoots her down and goes, yeah, that's quite an ego you've got there, basically. Yeah. Right, so. We've got the Agatha King, we've got the officers meeting with Souther and saying, look, we're on your side. And also, we've been back channel communicating to the. So, this is important and it's easy to miss in this, in the midst of this episode, especially in your first watch through. They've also spoken to the other ships, which is very important, very important. So,
but we also, in that conversation,
it's
we
not
also
just
get a little...
on that ship that they're talking about. They're talking about the fleet know that Noen is dodgy.
But we also get a little bit of we get a bit of Wynn backstory, which somewhat explains at least his enmity with Mars, if not his utter.
I have a thought on that. So I thought that was like a weird insertion of a story. It's like, oh, let me just sit you down and have a war story.
Not amongst military people, I don't think.
Okay, yeah, maybe this is more of a military.
Yeah,
they're meant to
be sort of impressed when they mention the Yasujuro.
They talk about this. Was it like a standoff, and then someone
the
got
Vesta
twitchy
blockade,
and then...
the much fronted Vesta blockade.
I think Wynn was the trig. He was the twitchy one that started the whole thing off.
I wouldn't be surprised if that story is very cleaned up and
and I think the baby but, maybe.
Yeah.
He got those people killed, basically.
And because I think it might have been a little bit of a parallel for what's happening kind of here, where things all get a bit chaotic and a bit to shit, and then Wynn comes out as maybe
his subordinate definitely buys the story, and he
worships him. Yeah.
Like from the actor's point of view, that he believes in that version of Wynn. But then I think, and you see it later on, when Wynn is quite happy to fire on that other UN ship, you see a reaction on his face. He's like, oh shit, is this not the dude I thought he was? It's just a nice little bit of like very subtle.
And we also get completely explicitly shown that Nguyen's on the side of Mao. He communicates with Mao. He's not there for the people of Earth. He's not there for his own
He does seem to be an Earth First fanatic, though. Like, I think I think he's on board because he just wants to wipe out Mars.
Yeah. There's a bit of that.
And there's probably money involved as well, right?
Well, yeah, that was one of the other things that's mentioned in that message. He says, like, Mao and his family's assets have all been unfrozen. They've got their money back. They've got control of everything again. Yeah. And well, and this is where like hell really breaks loose. Not in the battle that's happening between Earth and Mars, but between Project Caliban, the hybrids. We find out there's a fucking lot of them. basically, he gives Nguyen access to launching a weapon that is the hybrids, and that all happens. So talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to shut the curtains because it's getting a bit dark.
Okay, yeah. I can only repeat what Hamish said right now.
have we got more to say about the mutiny stuff, or what were you on?
I liked the mutineers.
I loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that how cleverly they sort of, you know, they don't telegraph their intentions. I mean, Wynn's suspicious, but yeah, they do it all in the smart way, you know, messaging and, you know, we're telling people to like, oh, you know, there's something wrong with this console. Oh, no, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. I love that.
And Souther checks the story of a spy. So we get a little spy cameo.
Yeah.
Fair play on remembering the names of ships. I guess as a spy, you'd probably like...
Can you now remember the name of that ship that you've heard the name of once?
Oh, which one? The Martian one or the...
The one that Spy confirms that was blown up by...
that one.
Oh, Mal. No.
I've just remembered it.
No. The Jashaki? No.
Oh,
it's the right kind of... Right kind Jikashi, of sounds.
You're in there, yeah.
You get in there.
Jiraxu.
It's a city. My point with that is like Spy does a good job of recalling like a ship name that he heard once like several days. I think it's Karakum, I think.
Oh, Karakum.
Yeah.
Because that was the ship that was sent to retrieve the protomolecule stuff.
Oh my god, I love the face that he's pulling. That one might be one for the thumbnail. Hang on.
Is this his
thinking face?
He's another perfect actor for the part. He just plays it like.
Hang on, I'll zoom that for the audience. No, Chris, you just went right in front of him. Oh. You sat there, you were sitting, looking all smug that you found the picture, then you rolled your chair around and went right in front of his face. Hey! Whip, woo. There we go.
But yeah, no, he. I think he acts that character very well, because he's big, tough spy, competent spy dude, but there's also a soft, there's a nice like softness to him and a warmth, which is hard to get into that role, and he does it beautifully.
And he plays it well, especially with the little interactions with Avasavala, like what was the one you liked? Being on the side of the good guys for a change again, or something like, you know, those little moments. Yeah, they really do. Yeah. But this is what makes this show so good: is it's not just throwing exposition and plot at you. There's moments, there's character,
It's not people declaring their characters, which a lot of like bad writing has. You get their characters through what they do and how they react to stuff.
Also, one thing I've noticed is that his hair is growing in accordance with time. As in, like, he wasn't he like completely
I think so, shaven.
Obviously I can't see it.
You got a good hairline there.
But mine used to be like that. I think it must have receded a bit there, because it used to be quite a peak like that.
When I had hair here, I had that exact. Yeah.
No, you've got a bit of hair. Are you doing a comb over?
I want to do a comb over, yeah.
An unironic comb over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is my hair still okay?
Oh, yeah. No, you're fucking gay. Fuck
it's,
you.
I tell you what, though. It's the only thing I've ever... It's the only feature I've ever had that I liked.
You ever think about growing it out a bit more?
Well, it is again. Oh, you've seen pictures of me with like shoulder length hair, haven't you?
Have I?
10 years ago, it was still dark, all of it. Now it's quite grey. It's like my beard now. Most of it's grey and there's a few dark bits.
Oh god, yeah, I do remember that. You look so different. It's, I mean, long hair just completely changes your face. I look at old pictures of me now, and I don't even recognize myself.
Well, you there's a picture of you that's kind of a like it could be like a LinkedIn profile or some such, you know, it's, or a bit, you know, for your CV or something. And it is, you look different in it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That probably actually is my LinkedIn photo.
Well, you've got a LinkedIn profile.
Oh God! I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing that the only mainstream social media I'm on these days is LinkedIn.
The thing is, I always thought LinkedIn was one of those things that it was just never took off, and it was just like,
no, it took
because
off.
They basically spam so much, you know.
No,
so
they
much
really
spam
do.
From
but
it.
it's basically it's a protection racket because people do look on there for. So if you're not on LinkedIn, you like, yeah,
it's a CV space. You
it's
know?
A thing.
Yeah, this, yeah. I didn't think it had actually taken off as that though until more recently. Yeah. People, even on the ferry, people talk about LinkedIn as if it's a legitimate thing, and it's like, oh, right.
I mean, to me, feels like Mumsnet for men. You know, like
I thought it was more. Well, I thought it was more. I thought it was more of a sort of if your CV's not in there, you don't exist. Sort of feeling.
I don't think it's like omnipresent in the hiring world, but it's like most people consider that, like, if you're sort of. I don't want to say career minded, but like if you have a professional life, it's better to have a profile on LinkedIn than not, generally speaking. But
well,
I don't
have a life, so it's fine. I'm quite happy to be not on LinkedIn.
Yeah. It'd be weird if you were on LinkedIn because it'd be like, because the thing is,
but no,
people who are on LinkedIn.
I see a lot of independent people on there. A lot of like indie programmers and stuff seem to use.
Yeah, like it's a sales. It's a professional. You know,
it's sell space, yourself, you know. Isn't it?
Sell yourself, yeah, yeah. But the
but I,
people
I don't
that
have
like
that energy though.
there's a certain type of psychopath that posts on LinkedIn. Like it's American psycho territory.
What they've got like posting and stuff.
Yeah, they got posting and stuff.
I just assumed it was like a literally like you go and see somebody on LinkedIn and it's like a CV type. I literally thought that's what it was.
That's what it's generally used for. But there are people, usually middle managers, that like to talk about their management philosophies.
Oh,
on
so
there.
People with no discernible skills who manage to somehow keep a job,
and are psychopaths.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You got it. The psychopath bit is important.
It's important for being a middle manager as well.
Yeah, but like the most psychopathic of middle managers post on LinkedIn. it's like I wouldn't trust my children with anyone that posts on LinkedIn, to be honest.
Right. So Nguyen basically gives, you know, loses it a bit and decides that anybody that's not loyal to me is a traitor, and yeah, finally gets a crew member who will fire the actual. No, does he fire it himself?
Yes.
Fire what?
Yes, he does. The missile.
Oh, yeah.
If he has a missile at the Jimenez.
Because there's a little bit moment, which I think I kind of like, is that he's not natural to it, not natural as some. He's like, press any key to continue.
Yeah, like, yeah. Why? Do you want to fire this missile? Why? And why?
Yeah, is it like, yeah, and I The little acting moments, I do quite like.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But I don't know who. So there's a bunch of people in the brig. The ship is like what being piloted by like three people, is it now?
Yeah, that's it's like everybody's been put in the.
I do like, it does seem like when he says like anybody who's not willing to follow my orders, step forward now.
And they
it does
fuck seem off.
Like the majority of bridge officers step forward.
Yeah. Mm.
So I mean, if you've got proto rockets with so what I'm assuming happens, but you might want to poker face me on this one, is that the hybrids go up in little rockets. The rockets like maybe attach themselves to a ship. The hybrid gets out and then goes for the reactor core.
Well, no, we've already seen in the stuff that Prax is viewing. We see what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a thick liquid filled cryopod. And then it's just basically the same technology as the breaching pods that other people, you know, like pirates have been seen to use and stuff like that. So they fire and like into, because remember, even in space, sorry, even on planets and moons and stuff like that, they're still in sealed environments. Because apart from Earth, there's no open space really, or atmosphere, sorry. So almost everything's based around space style technology. So if they were going to attack a city in Mars, it'd be a dome. So they'd have to break through the dome but seal it up again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. It's a sort of breaching pod type.
We don't know what the target of the we don't know what the target of the pods is. We don't know it's the ships.
It could just be Mars itself.
I wasn't going that far anyway. I was just going to talk about the technology. Sorry.
Oh, go on.
Did you think I was spoiling? Sorry.
No.
You were getting close to spoilering.
No. I was saying what the.
Drew was.
Drew was. Yeah. No, I was reading.
How am I getting close? I'm just saying we don't know what the pods have been launched at.
Wait, you know what the pods are being launched at.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but.
I'm saying is that Prax has already read or listened to the sales brochure sort of thing, and that's what it is in the background of a conversation, because he's watching it and then he has a background conversation. It's in the background of a conversation with him. I think it's Amos and him are talking at one point.
Yeah.
And it's still talking away in the background about these gel filled pods or liquid filled pods or whatever and stuff. So yeah, so they're in a stasis pod. That gets fired as a breaching thing.
All right, because they say at the end, the Rosnanti crew say they're firing the hybrids, right? Is that the term?
Yeah, they're literally firing the whatever they are.
Launching the
hybrids.
Launching the hybrids.
So those are little individual pods with a hybrid in them.
Wow. Okay.
And as I say, this isn't a spoiler. This is, Prax has discovered this from the sales brochure.
Yeah. And then the hybrid will then, go after the reactor core and everything in its way and people and... Right? Okay, poker face. Right, okay, I gotcha. I also like, actually, the captain lady of Mars, when she relays to her fleet, she only gives the there's a mutiny, let's watch them wipe each other out.
Yeah, let them do it themselves, yeah. She declares peace. Basically, as well. She says anybody that doesn't want to fire on us, we're fine with that as well. We won't fire.
We'll treat them as if they're acting under a flag of truce or something like that.
Yeah. I'm looking at the next bit. There's the preparation, because you jumped ahead with the launching thing. On the Rosnanti, they're making preparations for this extraction mission to save May, basically.
Yeah.
And Prax is doing... That's another good Prax and Amos scene where he's doing the target practice.
I love that.
That's a kind of sad scene because, Prax is like, it doesn't matter, I'm going to kill them all and get revenge. And Amos is like, oh, fuck, what have I done?
Yeah, he's created a monster. Or the doctor of the monster. Which one is it?
See, that dynamic is very interesting to me because it's almost like a little bit of role reversal.
Because Prax is behaving like this because he's been hanging around with Amos, and Amos is all like, well, I assume Amos has been saying things like off the cuff, well, if we don't manage, because the way he thinks, like, if we don't manage to rescue your daughter, we'll get fucking revenge. And Prax, in order to shield himself from possible loss, has internalized that,
and now
Amos has seen his own personality reflected back to him. And he doesn't.
I think you. Bloody hell! You should be some sort of psychologist, Drew.
that's a much better way of saying what I was thinking.
Yeah, same here. I was going to say something, and it would be like bumbling big words. I think is clever because I'm a writery sort of person.
Yeah.
Whereas Drew cuts through it all,
Because Wes Chatham or Wes Chatham?
Wes Chatham, yeah. I think it's hard tum.
Chatham. Channing Tatum.
No, not him. I don't like that. Oh, he freaks me out, that guy.
I like Channing. It does seem to be love him or hate him, Channing Tatum, and I like him.
I meant to make him the big
one. Your own opinion.
So that's the thoughtful face of him reflecting on the I gotta be honest. I wasn't a big Amos person at the beginning of the show.
But... I'm just looking at the patches on his outfit. I'm wondering if any of those are.
We've never mentioned the sort of devil horn badge that he always wears. The little metallic pewtery devil badge he wears all the time.
Is that a Baltimore thing? I
don't think so. No, because it looks almost like a kabuki mask, demon face kind of thing. It's does that mean right, it, right there in the bottom right corner under the
gunshots?
You need to move to the other side, Chris, so we can see them.
So well, it's like
we can't really see very clearly.
Yeah, I've got a better one.
I don't think it ever gets mentioned in the show either. But But yeah, Amos realizing what he is, and maybe he doesn't want to beat that.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, Kabuki mask is how I would describe it.
Actually, yeah, that does fold in with the conversation about Frankenstein's monster, doesn't it? It folds in so nicely.
It does. Yeah.
I like that he's got a tear in his suit and he's not fixed it.
that's probably where he got shot. When he was,
you're right, he still wears the same outfit. He must have just laundered it to get the blood off it. Yeah.
Not donned it.
Actually,
yet.
No, looking at it, it's still dark.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Look at the whole shoulder scene. From there across the bit of the shoulder, yeah, right, is all darker right. than the rest. Yeah.
But I don't think they launder their jumpsuits.
You've got an obsession with how smelly it is. We know this.
Well, the thing is, they're wearing an underlayer, right?
Underlayer.
like t-shirt and
it's overalls, isn't it? It's
overalls,
it goes
right?
Over.
Like, I've never watched my overalls, so
because
they only get dirty again straight away, right? Like,
There's a lot happens in this Ross and Auntie thing. And I don't want to jump around because I'll lose the thread. Because there's one big revelation in this section as well, which we get to. Drew's eyes. There's a revelation.
Revelation.
So basically, Alex and Bobby are. So we've got Prax and Amos at one point. We've got Alex and Bobby are also getting ready by Bobby looking for ammunition for her suit and questioning Alex about what the exact tactics were that they used to get the to get the proto-monster or whatever.
I love that she goes, you burned it. I need incendiary.
I need fire then. So what she does is she gets caseless incendiary tipped bullets. And she says, right, if I can just keep firing at it with these, then that should work then.
And we're all very experienced with those from Left 4 Dead, so we know exactly how they work.
Yeah, we do.
I see, my suspicion might be, and
how
again,
are they
going to
work out of an
face,
atmosphere?
Is that I think these incendiary rounds might actually make it worse.
No, actually, incendiary doesn't need oxygen, does it?
It will have a propellant in the thing.
So it'll be like a temporary little fire, basically.
Yeah, I think that could be the case, that it might actually make things worse, because it might be that the proto-molecule thrives on energy and not...
Giving it lots of small amounts of energy is probably going to make it stronger rather than blasting it with the ship.
Well, with the ship,
in one go, yeah.
Well, yeah, with the ship's thrusters, it melted it effectively, right? Or just,
I mean, that is presumably... That presumably
atomized
gets up to...
The fucker, yeah.
That's probably atomized. A higher temperature, I would assume, than...
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculously high temperature. Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah. So that's Bobby's getting ready. The next getting ready... there's a little in between, but Alex and his son, blah, whatever. Right. And then...
Sorry, I'm just working here.
What are you doing?
I'm just adjusting the lighting.
Oh, okay.
Nope, too much.
I thought you were calling us something.
Okay, I'm happy with that. All right, good.
So then we've got Holden and Naomi left. Although, I don't know where... I'm not sure where Avasarala is during all of this. Anyway, but we've got Holden and Naomi left, and they talk about... They finally have a slightly less heated conversation about the Fred Johnson protomolecule.
I like that conversation.
And that's more Holden being reasonable. Remember, we were talking about how they'd all held this grudge too much. This is like the I feel like they should have come down a bit and got to this point earlier.
Like everything, it takes time, right? Then you can only hold a grudge for so long. You can only hold on to anger for so long, unless you're Danny. So eventually it just peters out.
And then the big revelation, the thing that she's hinted at all along, is finally explicitly explained. She was in a relationship with a charismatic belter who was an OPA type, and they had a child.
They all
yeah, obviously, yeah.
Is this Dawes?
Yep.
We're not going to tell you anything. We're not going to tell you anything.
he went too close to a black hole. Yeah,
and time travel, so that she's 20 years younger than him now. And that's how it happened.
He met her before she'd given birth to him.
Yeah, exactly. So she reveals she's had a kid with this, but the important point of this and why it's all a big, why she doesn't like, why it hurts so much, why she's not talking about it, is he took the child away from her. As punishment for her not going along with these,
and his name is Philip.
OPA plans.
Oh, Philip Dawes.
And I do kind of wish when she said his name was Philip, Holden would have gone.
That'll be
the best name.
Phil Nagata.
Actually, do you want to know what's worse?
Phil Nagata sounds like some sort of instruction, doesn't it? What do you do with this bit of this the widget engine? Oh, you fill Nagata.
What is even worse is that this isn't Philip spelt with a PH. This is Philip spelt with an F.
I mean, that's Belter's probably. That's probably Belter. How do we know that? How do we know that?
He's got subtitles.
I never knew it was with an F.
Sorry, him there.
Actually, you know what I say what's worse? Actually, that makes sense. I'm actually on board with F for Philip.
PH for Philip is absurd, yeah. Yeah, but also Philip, father of Alexander the Great.
Mm.
Philip of Macedon.
Yeah. Philip of Mastodon.
Philip
of Mastodon. Yeah. Mastodon. Or as they pronounced it back then, Maxtodon.
Or fire.
Maxtodon.
Firefly. I don't know whatever you want to call it. Right, so this is the big Naomi reveal. This is the huge Naomi reveal.
I mean,
it's putting the conversation quite nicely, though. It's not like dun dun dun. There's no dramatic.
I know,
don't have a lot of dramatic music in this show as well. They've got a lot of music, but not like trying to push your emotions.
It's a big revelation for her, but I don't particularly care.
Hinted at so much that we kind of thinking, oh, that's what it is.
It's one of the. It's like when somebody announces something and you're like, okay.
It's like when somebody, it's like when somebody whose camp is a row of tents comes out to you and you go, yeah, I kind of guessed.
Really?
Yeah, it's a bit like an off the shelf backstory, isn't it? Like
she's built, she's dropped hens and built it.
It's not unusual to have a child. Like many people have done it, I believe.
But the important point is that he took the child away. That's the really important point.
But it's only a revelation because she's kept it secret poorly because she keeps letting this. It's not really
much a revelation, really. Yeah.
But you're right. What matters is the trauma associated with that rather than the fact that she has a child.
Yeah, it's not the fact that she has the child that's the thing. It's who the child's with and that he's taken the child away from her. Okay, right. We're getting.
I like the fact that it's like he sort of reconciles it with the fact that like I don't necessarily agree with what you've done, but I can accept that you think it was the right thing.
I find that response quite patronizing. That would have irritated me in Naomi's position.
It is a little bit patronizing.
It's a bit.
You're wrong, but that's okay. I love you, so I don't mind that you're wrong.
Sinner.
No, well.
But it's like. Sort of in my I sort of like the way I sort of rationalize a lot of politics is particularly in a democratic context is that like it's okay to advocate in your own self-interest, right? Like or you certainly should be able to sort of advocate for yourself and your people, whoever that might be. And it's like that might not necessarily be agreeable to everyone else, but at least that you should be allowed that advocacy, right? And then I kind of feel like that's her doing it for the Belters. It's like, look, you might not agree with the Belters having big technology, big weapons, but it's like, but from your point of view, I would probably think the same thing. You know,
that's why I hate Holden's response, because he basically says, if I said to you, I still think what you did was stupid and morally wrong, but,
I'm okay with it now. Morals don't really come into it, right? Do they?
I think they do for Holden. I think he thinks what she did is wrong, was wrong. And he's
going to have to get the exact text now, aren't I?
It's a patronizing, like, either... If you understand, I don't know. It doesn't exhibit understanding to me.
It does exhibit understanding to me.
Well, no, because he said, I still don't agree with what you did, or something like, I still think what you did was fucking stupid. Which means he didn't understand what she was saying. Because it wasn't stupid.
Yeah, Holden has got a sort of... He's not very forgiving her. He's pig-headed in certain places, isn't he? He's kind of weird.
It's like saying, I don't forgive you. I still think it was wrong, but we'll move past it. And I'm like, no, fuck off.
No, he forgives. I think that's forgiveness.
I don't think he is.
He doesn't say it out loud, but it's like, he says,
I still think it's stupid, or he says something along those lines.
I think there's a legal term, and I can't remember exactly what it's like, but it's like when two reasonable people disagree or something, where it's like you're presented with the same evidence and all of the same information, and two people, both of reasonable mind, can interpret them differently. Like, I kind of feel like this is a little bit like that case.
But then that's not forgiveness. Then that's not reconciliation. That is agree to disagree.
It's agree to disagree. That to me is a...
But that's not how he... His sort of body language and his emotional response doesn't match his words. Like, he's acting like...
You know what? He's the kind of prick I am. That's like, you know, I get what you're saying, because it's like, it's how I act. It's like, fine. Passive aggressive almost, I suppose. Is the,
You're a bit like the captain of the Polar Bear Extended Universe, right? You're the Holden of this station.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
and I don't.
Sorry, I was getting a bit self.
I'm the smashed up coffee machine of this operation.
what would Ozone be? Because he's part
what
of the
Ozone
Polar
Bears. Be? What would Ozone be?
What would Ozone be?
I'm blinded by it. So I recently saw Ozone's face for the first time when he was streaming. And he's got fucking magnificent eyebrows.
He does have, he puts mine to shame. I can't think
beyond the eyebrows. Like, I'm not taking the piss, they're beautiful. Like,
they're lovely eyebrows. But, Ozone is just...
He would be the eyebrows.
It's very... Oh, I'm trying to think how to do it. See, bear with me, and let me explain this fully before you jump on me on this. He's kind of got Alex-type vibes. I knew you were going to fucking do this. In as much as he's the peacemaker, you know, he's the reasonable, level-headed one of things. But he's not got Alex vibes in loads of other ways, you know.
He wouldn't abandon his child.
Who's the peacemaker?
He loves his family.
Yeah, who's the peacemaker? Who's the peacemaker?
Chris is the Prax.
No, who's the peacemaker in the show then? I mean, who's...
It's Alex. Sometimes,
Alex really is the only person that's sort of...
Naomi sometimes.
Oh, you could just say Souther. Actually, that Souther's probably better.
Souther is... Yeah, that fits for me. Ozone, Souther.
Hello, Ozone, you're Souther. But we need to put Ozone somewhere.
He's not on the Ross Nancy.
He's not on the Rossi, yeah. On the Rossi, I think... Naomi, I think, because he's very technical as well.
I think maybe you're right. Naomi is a peacemaker as well when she's not being when she's not the person
causing the trouble herself.
yeah, she's at the moment, and for a while she's been the sort of ostracized one, and that's
So the only one left for me is Amos.
No, you've got loads. You've got Miller. Take. You've got
I'd love to be Miller.
You could be Miller.
Bobby,
I'm Miller in the
kind of like
a,
away.
She's given up.
Yeah,
I'll be Miller.
Right, okay. Spy, Alex, James, Adam Jensen.
Alex James, why is it with you and musicians? You're obsessed with musicians.
Musicians just have very bland names.
Or like Jimi Hendrix. That's not a very
Ziggy
bland
Stardust.
Name. Yeah, come on.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Engelbert Humperdinck, yeah. Where are you getting these bland names from? Right, okay, let's get back to the point here, because, why not? It's almost subversive to talk about The Expanse on our show these days. So, did you see what I meant about there being two actors playing Katoa? Was it more obvious in this episode?
Yeah, it's
clear in this episode that the physical actor has been changed as well, but not in a jarring way. It's just like he's become more proto-molecule-y, so they've used a more adult actor, I think, for that. Just for
yeah, I mean, I don't. Is that because there's more like nudity as well? Like it just makes
possibly.
It a bit,
yeah, that's what I was thinking about. Because like... it's one of those shows where they strap over everybody's nipples and everybody's groin when they're like, even when there's a dead body on a fucking slab and stuff. It's like, I mean, I get you know, you don't want to sensationalize nudity, but then doing that makes it more weird.
Yeah, like. There's a something that's obviously non-sexual nudity.
But the problem, is that there's children
even
in the
sexual,
show.
Yeah, but
there's children in the show, and I think they just don't want to show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
People will cover up a female child's nipples, you know, and it's kind of weird, really, when you think about it. It's almost sexualizing the child by not indicating that they all look the fucking same until they're about 12 anyway, you know. It's like,
it's kind of because that kind of thing is very hard to draw a line with.
Yeah, like, that's true.
If you do it for one child,
you've got to do it for them all, sort of thing. Even
but
if
the thing is with this show, like, it's obviously there's no ambiguity, it's obviously non-sexual, but I mean, it's, you know, you're probably still, even in terms of, because there's two sort of facets here, isn't there?
Sexual nudity isn't bad. We're not Americans.
No, but it's an American show.
It's an American show.
The big deal that people made, and I can sort of see it. Mm. I'm not sure I entirely agree with it, but I can see the argument. The big deal that people made when VHS and Betamax, you know, home video came along was that nudity and gore and things like that were okay, but the fact that you could pause it and look at it and replay it, and like, you know, where you'd see a film and you'd see someone be like, you know, you're seeing it in the story context. And one of the arguments against, you know, for more censorship basically was that once it's on home video, you can, you know, you can pour over
That's valid in as far as it goes, but so what?
Well, I know. But my point is...
I know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily agreeing with it, but what I'm saying is that that makes some sort of logic.
That is logical, yeah. Because the context desexualizes it. You remove the context, you've got...
But why does it matter? Why are you being anti... I know you're not an anti-sex person. Why are you being anti-sex?
Well, I think we're talking more about the children than anything else in this particular case.
But, I mean, there's no... You would never present children sexually, so why would that even come into question?
Because what we're saying is that somebody who is, you know, has these predilections could be sitting zipping back and forth over a scene.
You can't stop that, though.
You can't stop it, no. But you could before, when films were just stuff in the cinema.
I mean, they had photographs.
Yeah, you know? I know. It's a fallacious argument.
I didn't understand the context that you meant specifically with the children.
One example. Another example that comes to mind, and once you notice it, it's really fucking weird and jarring. And it actually re-sexualizes something that wasn't a sexual scene. On Alien, when they open the pods and everything, you can't really see Ripley. But because they have to come around, there's seven of them in the pods, and they have to come round to vote, because the big thing is Kane waking up as the sort of, you know, the scene. And in the background, Veronica Cartwright is there, and they're not naked. They were meant to be naked completely, but the women weren't keen on that anyway. So they've all got sort of pants on, but they're all topless. But then Veronica Cartwright's got this like tiny thin bit of material going right across her nipples. But it doesn't really cover up her nipples. And B, it just attracts attention to the fact that there's this weird band. You know, if it was a vest or something, like in Aliens, they've all got vests and pants, and it's like, right, okay. It's just weird thing. Okay, I've seen that film a lot, so you start looking at the background, because you're trying to work out, oh, where is it? You know, it's just one of those things you do when you've seen it enough. It's like, oh, who's in which pod? Doesn't make any difference, it has no meaning, but you're like, oh, that's Captain Dallas over there, there's Ripley, there's... You know, Parker there, but it's just weird.
I mean, from the audience point of view, because I know there's
but
it's
the actor
different
probably
when it's
didn't,
like,
you know, I wish I could ask Veronica Cartwright about that and say, wouldn't you have felt better if they'd just given you all vests or a bra even or something like that? Was that really a good concession to you not wanting to do a nude scene, you know, a topless scene? you know, wouldn't that have been better to be less? Because it's basically sexualizing the scene by making it a, it's like a peekaboo thing. It's really fucking weird. Yeah. It's like a bit of string, basically.
And also, I kind of find it weird when it comes to boobs in general that it's the nipple is the line that they draw.
Yeah, like, but a woman with large breasts is going to very obviously still have large breasts, no matter whether you cover up the nipple or not.
Yeah, like when I think about breasts in whatever context, I'm not thinking like the nipple isn't like the be all and end all of it.
We are talking about sexual things, and I want to disconnect that from my previous comments of Veronica Cartwright as an actress.
You're not unexcited. Oh, it's the nipple. Well, hey.
Yeah, exactly. That to me seems a weird line to. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean,
different cultures draw the line. Different countries' censors draw the line in different places, don't they? Mm-hmm.
But then also, is there a percentage of boob that is unacceptable?
I know that's another thing. Is like under boob, side boob, or you know, cleavage. Yeah. It is a really weird thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. On the one hand, I absolutely love breasts. I love women generally. I've got a very, you know, I'm very attracted to women. I'm very hetero, you know. And I'm not boasting or something. I'm just saying that, like, on the, you know, if there's a gauge, I'm very much on one side. But I can appreciate the other side of it. Anyway, but the point is that, the culture of covering up things sort of makes them more exciting, and that's definitely the Western world sort of way, isn't it?
Sometimes I think that's intentional, but I don't, you know.
Well, the thing is, right? Yeah, I'll give you a little example. It's not like I was like in the street being horny, but there was like a woman the other day I saw, right? Mm-hmm. And she was just walking across the road. I was out walking the dog, and it was just a little fleeting thing. And she had like a really plain. Like, it was a woolen skirt with black and white hoops. And it was, like, really plain. And she had, like, you know, winter tights on, you know, woolly sort of winter tights on. But there was something attractive about it. Yeah. But she was completely covered up. So it's, you know, and it's not really about... almost all of it's your imagination. That's why, you know, that's why the sort of brand suspenders, stockings and suspenders outfit is not necessarily my thing, but I can see... You know, it's more than just here's a woman, here's a naked woman. You know, it's like that pen. You know, your pen.
Yeah, you know, it's like that. Yeah. So does that conclude the horny Hamish corner?
Horny Hamish corner. There's more to that as well that I sort of consumed in my brain afterwards. Not in a sexual, but why that appealed to me. But I'm not going to go into that.
And now we move on to somebody else. And now we move on to Drew's on dicks. Have you seen any good dicks lately, Drew?
Have you broken any dicks lately?
I've not. No, mine's largely inactive these days. I don't think I've seen a dick for a while.
Oh, okay.
At all.
Do some research and get back to us.
Well, I've for sexual entertainment purposes, I have, and the Falcon and I discussed this a while back. I've moved towards audio rather than video.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I find saucy books weirdly arousing, to be honest.
No, never found it with books, but I mean,
When I was like starting my, you know, sexual journey in your early-ish teens, perhaps, maybe I discovered one of my mum's saucy books, and it was a lovely book about, it's like an anthology of various different stories of couples that were that just like an exciting anecdote, you know. It's like an anthology.
Right.
You know, there's like there's one time when this like, and it was all very wholesome, you know. They were all like together couples. There wasn't any, you know, drama or anything like that. It was just an example of like generally healthy but slightly naughty sort of sexual encounters type of thing. And that fucking blew my little tiny teenage brain. Like, it really did. I think it shaped a lot of that, like what I kind of look for, like to, like the story and the context for a lot of the kind of sort of titillating stuff is like key for me. It's not just about the pounding. It's about the sort of the pounding it real.
The hair going as well. Actually, there was a funny. Drew's got me watching not porn, but a show called The Americans. And the teenage daughter walks in on her mom and dad at one point, and they're basically in a sort of sideways 69. And the daughter's like, fuck!
To be fair, in that show, of all the things she could have walked on her mum and dad doing, that's sex pretty is bad. Like the least. Sex is the least bad.
Yeah, I'm surprised how blasé they are about like the basement with the dark room and everything, and like photos of secret documents have been hanging on the pegs to dry. Well,
they had a dude in the car boot for about 3 days. That's true. Like, I would have found that as a kid.
Yeah, exactly. So, all the sex stuff aside, I can't remember how we got onto that. Let's not even think about it, because
there's a good line that our favourite captain says earlier in the show that I missed. She talks about when she's saying why she gave the video, she's justifying it to a first officer. And she says war is an inherently unstable mix of intense emotion, politics, and luck, and that video is luck. And I like that. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. I imagine that in the chaos of war, there's a lot of weird shit that happens that probably never gets explained, because people do things. You know, when there are lots of people with a really sort of in a panicky, twitchy state of mind, you don't act rationally, right? You necessarily, or not everyone's going to act rationally.
Well, you often hear about, like, if there's a situation with a lot of people who are feeling antagonistic towards each other, you hear about like the tinderbox moment that sets things off. But, you know, the opposite can happen. There can be a moment of, you know.
Yeah, war is an inherently unstable interaction of three things: intense emotion, politics, and luck. Mm. That message was luck. Maybe out there, away from all the politics and bullshit, Locke opens the door and lets a couple of grunts figure out how not to fight for once.
I do like the way portrays not the military as an organization, but military people and how, like, people. Course, like, you don't want to fucking fight, really. Like, nobody wants to fight, really.
Well, you don't want to die, basically, do you?
Almost, you know, the same people.
Well, the same people are the ones that are out fighting the war, which is weird. When you think about it.
Yeah. Lions led by donkeys, innit? That's the.
Who do fine work, by the way, led by donkeys. You know the organization? Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen them on social media a few times.
Yeah, they're a group that do like stunts to highlight political bad things, basically bad things. See, I'm the one with all the words. I know what I'm talking about. And they're the ones that put up like billboards with how much money Farage has grifted since he became an MP and stuff like that. And they're the ones that dropped the banner, the slow drop banner behind Truss. The
cabinet lettuce thing.
Sorry, I drifted off about something.
I love the lettuce thing. The lettuce thing was the best thing.
Yeah, the lettuce with googly eyes.
Oh my god, okay, the lettuce band. I gotta put this up because there's going to be a lot of people that don't know this. Oh my god, I do miss Liz Truss.
To the video.
Oh my god.
So anyway,
I just typed lettuce into a DuckDuckGo search. What was I expecting? I miss Liz Truss. I hope she tries a comeback.
I love that the whole thing was which newspaper was it that did it? And it was
Led by Donkeys that did it.
No, the lettuce thing, the original
the Star?
Star, Mirror.
I think Star might be, yeah. And so they got a lettuce and they said, will this lettuce last long as Liz Truss? And like, you know, just as a funny
a
thing.
Joke,
but it's so fucking funny that the lettuce lasts long.
Actually did
longer.
Last
like,
longer.
It's so funny.
That's like every day was a banger, you know. Like, so that's the banner. And Liz Truss.
I better put Chris up fully. I crashed the economy, and there's Liz Truss.
Her reaction to it was amazing as well.
She goes off.
No charisma, no grace, no good humor.
Oh, very fucking funny. It's just like that's not funny.
And also, the lettuce, it applies that the lettuce crashed the economy. And I'd like to point out, I would have voted for the lettuce over Liz Truss.
The economy, yeah.
Yeah.
People lost a lot of money.
Lettuce for Prime Minister.
Tory walk.
Pardon?
You got a good Tory walk.
Ever?
I liked it. You fake Tory walk. It was good.
Glad
I'm not saying
fake.
You walk like a Tory. I'm saying,
Walk like a Tory.
Lettuce for President.
Bum, 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 bum. Now I want to write a song with those lyrics. I've done that before. I've done a few when I started doing like open mic things. When I moved back down this way, I did a couple of songs where I like rejigged the lyrics for comic effect. You know. Anyway, it's not about me. Yeah.
Well,
so we've
like
got
Michael Scott in the American Office.
So we've got the IO stuff. So Kato has been put in an isolation chamber by now, so that he doesn't take apart any more staff. And Jean-Pierre Mao is like absolutely, he's gone back to the complete evil madman genius Bond
villain. I love
villain.
That he kept
he's gone completely back to the Bond villain.
He kept teasing Chris with a redemption arc, and then as soon as he's like, let's use that one, let's use the cute one that I've become friends with.
Yeah. That bit's even worse. That was what I was building up to there, but never mind.
I'm sorry.
but
that's the point, as he goes, right, time to use the really cute kid that I've been talking to, and we've humanized as much as possible,
and who reminds me of my daughter.
And reminds me of my daughter. Let's experiment on her next.
But
as we all know, thankfully, the Rocinante crew arrive and attack the facility.
Will they arrive in
time? Will
they
arrive in time? Yeah.
Now,
This is the cliffhanger a bit, isn't it?
If this had been a 40s show, it would have been, will they arrive in time at the end?
I was a bit surprised to see such a blatant cliffhanger. They often don't do something like that.
They have a couple of times, but not very often.
They have a couple of times. I'm not complaining necessarily. It's it probably is a decent break for it, because there's probably a few more things that might need to happen before they stumble upon May, who's just been injected by proto molecule.
You really want her to be the ship's proto molecule man, don't you?
So they bring her back.
He wants to change it to Star Trek. That's what he wants.
They bring her back to the Rossi, and she's been protoed, and she becomes, but through the love of a father and his daughter, becomes a good proto molecule
two dads now. Prax Namos.
Oh yeah, two dads. Totally. And she'll grow up to influence the proto molecule ecosystem in a positive way, and there'll be, you know.
I know this is not wrong. You'd love, all your speculations go in a Star Trek direction. You'd fucking love Star Trek.
From the episodes I've seen.
I mean, I think Star Trek has got so many flaws, and
oh yeah, no,
as far
sure,
as humanity goes, almost none of it's fucking possible. Not the technology stuff, the humanity side of it, because people are bastards generally.
Isn't like part of the premise of Star Trek is that if everyone's comfortable, got a roof over their head, and knows where their next meal is coming from, that we then sort of move to a higher tier of humanity.
Yeah, but that's something that that's completely within humanity's grasp now, though.
We're not post scarcity. I mean, Star Trek is a full on post scarcity.
No, I think we are.
No, we have enough, but that's different from being post scarcity. When there's no scarcity, there's literally no point in capitalism competing for resources. When they are limited, then it still makes no sense from a humanitarian point of view. But from an avaricious capitalist mindset.
Yeah, but I'm sure I'm sure you both agree when I observe that capitalism sort of enforces a lot of arbitrary competition to sort of justify itself.
To keep it so. It's like a lot of scenes, if you like, a lot of businesses, a lot of hobbies that they're doing, but things like, say, the fashion industry, there's one that's just completely fucking based on itself.
But
any of it other than people have to be, want to be covered up and warm when it's cold and, whatever.
Limitless energy and replicators, we don't need the capitalists anymore for anything.
Yeah, but we know what will happen there. As soon as that technology comes out, somebody will patent it and try and keep it for themselves.
I always think if you got a replicator,
we've got enough.
You just replicate another replicator.
Yeah, well, we've got enough food and things on the planet as it is. We've got them.
Yeah, no, we've got enough.
There are huge companies holding back medication while people are dying, literally right now. That happens.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But we're not. Yeah,
you know, it's not like there isn't. We could be a lot better. We couldn't be. Oh, yeah, I know what you're saying. I know the difference. You've made
a lot more CEOs to shoot. A lot more CEOs to shoot.
Yeah, yeah. You've made a good point about the difference between post scarcity and you know, sustainability.
Enough.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But even at that, we could be a lot better. But you know, brown people and you know. People with different religions and whatever, you just don't matter to the world, obviously.
Now, the Luigi Mangione weapon, that was a 3D printed gun, wasn't it?
Was it? Didn't know that.
That's what that's what I've read. I don't know. I don't think any of that's come from.
Did you see them parading him in his orange suit?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. He's not Hannibal Lecter, guys, you know.
the gun, when he shot, the gun did seem to jam, so it did look like a.
I mean, it's the thing is, like, I always laughed at the Second Amendment stuff because it's like, ha ha ha, you genuinely think you're gonna take down the system with guns? And it's I don't know, actually. Louis Mangione kind of made me question that.
But that was what it was meant for, is that exactly that? Not assassinating. Let's not call it an assassination. That makes it sound like it's. That almost gives gravitas to the fucking guy that died.
It's an act of self-defense.
It's an act of self-defense, yeah. But the killing of that guy... Not the killing of the guy, but the threat of being able to kill that guy was what's meant by the Second Amendment. It's what's meant by the by the masses being able to have weapons and to stop that. But for some reason, capitalism and government... still are somehow separating people's minds. I mean, it's not. There's no separation. Everything about our government systems is about protecting one of two types of capitalism.
That's what Drew American out. Libertarianism seems to skip. Like, they're okay with corporations.
I mean, the thing with the American libertarianism stuff is I do see a lot of breadth of... I don't want to say breadth of thought. That kind of gives it too much credit. But, like... it's not one thing, right? There's lots of different interpretations of that.
Yeah, but they're all fucking stupid
in different
ways, and they all come from the same, you know, from the Red Scare and the McCarthy witch, you know, the absolute erasure of socialism as a thing that you can think of in America. That's the only way you get to libertarianism. Like, they would be socialists if they were educated.
Yeah, it's propaganda against anything that's... Yeah, I mean, just let me say the red skin. Let's not get into that detail.
Have we glossed over everything in the episode in little dribs and drabs?
No, there's still it's big events, mostly. I was just reading through the thing about May. Yeah, so Strickland suggests May would be the next best subject to receive the protomolecule treatment. And she's shown being strapped down and ready for treatment. And then suddenly, dun dun da, there's an interruption as the Rocinante crew arrive at the front door, basically.
Are they going to save her in time?
And then the other important thing that happens is one thing left to mention is that these the hybrid missiles, the missiles with the protomolecule hybrids in them, start getting fucking launched. By Noel.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember, I don't want to spoil the next episode, but, you know, there's quite a few people being shot in this episode on board the Hammurabi. Not the Hammurabi, sorry, the Agatha King.
The mutiny.
Souther's dead by now. He was shot dead almost immediately by Noel. The loyal crew are still trying to get it, but they kill Boyer. And Shaver and Mancuso are short. Yeah, it all happens in this episode. I was making sure before I said it. I didn't want to spoil it. This is all wrapped up. Oh, yeah, we know it's wrapped up from various things. But yeah, so basically... So once he kills basically the loyal crew on the Agatha King... He gives orders to the fleet to change to head for Io, I think it is. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Right, we're all going to Io now. And the ships that are loyal don't. And Wen shoots one of them down, and that's the sort of kind of the end of that whole arc, because obviously
then they all start shooting at each other.
Yeah, they start, well, some of them shooting at each other, and they're not going to, you know, nobody's going to follow Wen anymore. They're kind of getting that. So it's kind of bringing it to peace breaks out.
How many ships are in that fleet?
in that UNN fleet?
They mentioned on the Martian ship, they said we've got 23 frigates and they've got 43, somewhere around those kind of numbers.
Okay, so five is not a small amount.
Mm. No. So, so that's happened. So, dead people on ship.
I did wonder previously when I watched this episode, I did wonder why, because the Agatha King just launches a missile at the Jimenez.
Is that
the
name of the ship? Jimenez.
And I wondered why it doesn't PDC it down, or
well, that's what they say, they don't defend themselves because I think they're just not expecting it.
Well, I mean, would they see it coming in? You know, but with the PDC, I think Wynn does refer to the Jimenez as a PT boat. Which
what does that mean? Damn PT
patrol.
Boats.
It's a patrol torpedo boat.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that doesn't really exist anymore. It's basically a fast, small ship that launches torpedoes. So I think that's a small... I think in the context of the show...
It's the kind of things they use in Vietnam a lot. Those little...
Yeah. It's a small, fast-moving ship.
To go up probably, a river, not even a sea
boat thing. But in the context of the show, it probably doesn't have the PDC cannons. Or the PDCs. Mm.
Oh, excuse me, sorry.
Because I didn't wonder why I didn't just shoot that down, or nobody tries to shoot that down. Bless you.
Big trumpet.
We really should end it.
Yeah, well, I was going to say... The final thing is the protomolecule things getting launched. And what colour are the protomolecule things, Chris?
They are blue.